Then see we've got a full half. We've got I don't know, I'm just looking because sometimes with this venue it's so overcrowded you don't see the committee members. So it's a bit difficult. I think we've asked not to use this venue.
Some of you have been in the venue before and some of you are closing. second. Let me just quickly start off with the report very briefly of the visit to the Gauteng province on issues relating to gambling. I'm not going to read everything in the report, except to say that the report has been submitted now to the committee for further consideration of that particular visit. The only few areas that we were not able to visit were Fafi, Dive, and what? The cutting. I say these things because they are part of gambling, and they are very often not generally known in the public legal space, so to speak. But those are things that we would have liked to see and understand and advise the committee on how to deal with that. Some of which are activities that could just as well be found or have been practiced in the schools, which is a bit of a worry to the committee, with all its unintended consequences. The rest, as I say, I'm not going to give every detail. It's quite an involved report, otherwise it will consume the time of the committee. There are recommendations that were placed before the committee on each area of gambling. But just to quickly go to yesterday's meeting with the National Gambling Board, we were fully briefed about the draft, on the draft norms and standards, which seek to standardize gambling activities between the provinces and the National Gambling Board, and also among provinces themselves, because as you would understand, provinces have certain powers relating to gambling. But also, there has been a realization, and it's part of the report as well of the commission, that among themselves, there is no standardized manner in which they are dealing with gambling activities. So there is currently on the table a draft of the norms and standards. That's what we dealt with yesterday. The second issue that we dealt with, Chairperson, was what we would call, for lack of a better word, quick fixes. Things that we thought could be done by the National Gambling Board together with the PCI, which do not necessarily need to wait for amendments to existing legislation and regulations and so on. So, Chairperson, that is as far as we went yesterday. Again, I'm not going to tabulate the whole list of all of those things that we thought are quick fixes. The one area that we thought we should raise regarding that in particular is that we should not, we should be careful not to run two parallel processes. The first part being that of amending the legislation, but at the same time dealing with what we call prefixes. So it's a matter that we place before the committee, for the committee to advise. And once we have a written document on all those areas which we think are prefixes, we will submit that to the committee for the committee to consider and advise whether it is proper for us to do that. But we did raise that issue that we might be running two parallel processes and it might not be advisable. So we seek advice at that level. The second issue that we thought we should report to the committee. Initially, we thought that we would convene a meeting of the working group together with the South African Reserve Bank, Treasury, FICA again, BASA, the business, the Banking Association of South Africa, and PASA, who were here yesterday, together with Home Affairs, to deal specifically with issues relating to interactive or online gambling. We think that the working group does not have that capacity, and we are advising the committee to convene such a meeting similar to this kind of public meeting. Those are the issues that we would like to bring before the committee for further advice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Professor. You know, we've asked the last time we were here. Yeah, just one.
Chairperson, the very last issue. We did toy around with the idea of legislating on online gambling separate from gambling as a broad kind of activity, precisely because we realize that it is a very huge part of the gambling industry. We don't know much about it yet. We thought that it was a small but important issue. Slowly we are beginning to learn that there is a whole lot of online gambling that is taking place inside the country, and it is illegal. So a much more focused attention has got to be given to that. Again, we are subject to correction because it might not necessarily to separate interactive gambling from the rest of gambling. But we thought some special focus has got to be given to it. And we are placing this before the committee to advise further whether there is a need to look further into it and perhaps legislate specially on it, separate from the general gambling that we know and other forms of betting and so on. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Chairperson. Can I just suggest to the committee, as I think I was saying, that we requested a consolidated report of where we're going as we can come to the end. The first person who we will take is a member of any member of the actual subcommittee working. I see your hand was up, please.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are two or three things that need to be noted. Firstly, that there is a consultative process that's going to be rolled out. There's a time frame that was proposed by the National Gambling Board with specific time frames, which they plan to kick off on the 25th of November, if I'm right. and it goes along towards sometime in the middle of next year. Secondly, that there was concerns that needs to be addressed between the National Gambling Board and DTI on certain agreements, let me put it in that way, where they did not align with some of the norms and standards and how that should be taken up on board, and I think that must be noted. Thirdly, that the norms and standards did not take into account on the issue of the National Lotteries Board or the NDTLTF. And it was also a request that a similar process must be taken into account on that specific venue or part that must be taken, and that was also taken up with the DGI. I don't want to repeat what the chairperson said, but that this consultative process that must take place goes with provinces that will be linking to their concerns and not to take away their right or their authority in that specific process. I think that must be definitely noted, and that was also the view that was brought by the committee. Thank you. We need to address the issue about the member of COPE that needs to present or needs to sit on that committee. There were some concerns yesterday who sits and who does not sit, and there's no official decision on that. We know that there are some concerns, but yesterday it did raise some concerns, and I think at the end of the time of today, we need to officially finalize that position so that we can deal with that issue.
Let me just put it this way. I have already consulted with the leadership of COPILAC. I don't mean the chairperson. I'm in Parliament. You know, they have a senior whip, I think it is, and so on and so forth. And we did, to some extent, clarify certain things so that it would assist the committee itself in going forward with certain matters. So, should we find there is an exigency of whatever kind, we will go further. So I don't want to consult it right now because, you know, these are matters that I think even the speaker's office from time to time who has to grapple with all our parties and so on rather than just a particular party. So I'd rather do it that way if I may just on that level.
Madam Chair, let me make it clear. I was never consulted as to who was putting on the working group. I don't know how PCs operate. I don't know whether the chairman has a discretion to decide how he or she wants to run it. But I was never asked to serve on this gambling working committee. Not only that, I think it's actually, possibly it's procedure, but I think it's bad manners and not to speak to me before you go and speak to my whip. Thirdly, I would like to know who put me on that committee and who decides who's to serve on which working group. I mean, this committee has a number of responsibilities, and obviously if one has to do your work, I'm paid to come here and be a member of Parliament, and I'm always pushing the scrump, but I don't like to be deployed because that's not my culture, democratically speaking.
It's very good of you to come in. But may I just add, you've always been a member of the committee and we couldn't start when you came in. That was the reason when we saw that you had come to this committee, we had to clarify the position. we did do, as we do with all members that would, you know, come to the committee for the first time, especially if your name had even been given to us incorrectly. And I think we did explain that as well. And I think we made the initial inquiry in that regard. So that was what we do with every new member, no matter if it is from a member of my own party or anyone else. We have to do that. So that we just check out what the processes are. So it's not a matter of being discourteous. We didn't even know who McKenzie was, quite frankly, per se. There was a confusion initially, and I think you are aware of that. So you please bear in mind that we do try. We have a committee secretary here who is very, very aware, given a number of processes that are carried on in the committee over difficult legislation, that there is a need for us to consult. And I hope you take it in that particular spirit and not in any other spirit itself. So I hope that you will feel like that. Thank you. Is that all right? Thank you very much.
Thanks, ma'am. I'm sorry to bring up a domestic matter when we're dealing with public issues.
Yes, well, you know, internal affairs sometimes creeps into a number of things. So if you may just carry on then. Is it just on perhaps the substantive issues, Honourable Pavasa, which I think you were also just raising, Honourable Smiley Gambier, you mentioned the gambling board and a few other things. Look, this is a 9-page report, and clearly we were only highlighting some of the issues. I think I must make that clear. There is a lot more work to be done. And this committee, once again, says to yourself, I'm sure, Honourable Pavasa, that we cannot overlook the fact that the reason why this even landed on our desk, as it were, in 2009, March was it? When were we elected? May. You know, first week after being elected as the chair by committee members, one learned that there was gambling. And it was purely Interactive that was here as a regulation. And this committee, after looking at it, called for a repeal and review, if least, of the major legislation because it needed to be re-examined. That was then. And we even, in our own report, which is in Hansard and on these books that they published, called for the establishment of, what was it, a small committee or a research or whatever, and to get funding for that. And the minister's response was, if the committee so accepts it, the department itself would like to run, establish a commission to do that. That is the history of this, why we're here today. And some of you have been here before at public hearings. Do you remember the first phase, as it were? So it's a long, long process which goes back to 2009, when the whip was not even present, the current whip. So I think all of us need to be aware of this and to say we've come a long way. We've not accepted that this legislation needs a dramatic, a radical review. And that's only where we are. But I don't want us to forget online is busy coming in as we talk, and we need to address that. But I want to thank you, Honourable Pavasa. I think your committee's got a lot of work in front of them. I think it would be wise to mention now, and I will recognise the hand in a minute, Honourable Harris, is that we did mention some form of study visit in this regard, and we do need to also look into that before we close next week. I hope I'm correct there. Yes, Honourable Harris.
Chair, as always, I appreciate the work that the working group is doing. I know it takes a lot of time. Served on several myself, so I'm grateful for the work they're doing, but I'm uncertain. I understand we're trying to achieve quick wins, like norms and standards, but is there not a case to be made for just initiating a legislative review, just amending it up? Would we not cut through a lot of issues by simply starting to do that?
Well, Yes, let me allow the chair of the working group to address it, because we did address it once ourselves, yes?
Yeah, Chairperson, the question of norms and standards is part of the legislative process, and therefore it needs to be looked at in that light. I was just saying that the NGP yesterday brought before the working group this document. We had quite extensive discussion on it, and that's why we are bringing it before the committee. Because it's not just a matter that can be dealt with outside the legislative process, and the DTI is here, and that's why we're bringing it before the committee in the presence of all of them. We're not going to be able to deal with that ourselves as a working group and take decisions on it. In fact, Chairperson, I recall that in one of the meetings of the working group, we did suggest that we need to now begin to take legal advice as well. And I think the committee will then mandate us who we must deal with among the legal persons inside Parliament.
I think that decision should be taken at our next meeting, which allows us all to consider that. We have to do that. All right, let's not debate it. We must. But here's an opportunity for the working group and also the gambling board to share with us what it is that they do have. I think that's it. But yes, norms and standards are in the national legislation. That's what it's all about. That is what we deal with, not the problem. So I think we all agreed on that. I don't want to belabor the point, and I do want to thank you, Honourable Kovasa, for sharing that with us. And in fact, Honourable Harris, really acknowledging the work you're doing. I think anyone who serves in a working group knows it's a sweet shop. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, could I ask that at some stage we could consider Mr. Harris's proposal that we have a legislative review, because I get a feeling that once you've heard all this evidence, this thing is too big for a PC to do. I mean, I think you want a good technical team within the DTI to come up with an amending bill.
As I said right at the beginning, when I mentioned 2009, that is what we called for in that report. Maybe I need certainness and you bring that report back. It went to the House, it was adopted. I must make that clear. So, you know, we're just trying to move in that direction. So all we're going to do this time, we're not going to draft the legislation, let me make that clear. Right, we're not going to draft it. But we are going to take the report back to the House for the House to adopt. And I'm sure that's going to be one. If I may be allowed to leave that there at the moment. But thank you, Honourable McIntosh. We will deal with those particular matters. Can we, at this point, thank all of you working in that area? And we will be turning to the National Gambling Board. I think it's first on the board here before us. Before I actually welcome them to acknowledge, I've just seen there's a sort of awkward room yourself, DDG, and that is Ms. Lordwood and Thule. Thank you very much, and your team to be here with you as well. Well, I don't see them, but as I said, it could be that one is missing, Mr. McDonald, and yes, you see, I mean, you know, just can't see everyone and others that are maybe here. So I'm just going to change my seat. I want to move to where I have a better vision and can see everyone. Just a minute.
Well, I'll ask while you're moving. I forgot to bring this up in the adoption of the agenda, but I have one more committee matter I'd just like to inquire about. Perhaps you do it at the end, or can I do it now quickly? What do you advise?
While I'm moving, if you're able.
Okay, it's just a commitment made by the DTI last Friday or Thursday to to bring in that report on the incentives by Tuesday morning. I'm inquiring whether we have received that yet.
I just want to raise this just at the moment.
The only reason I didn't is as I walked in, the committee secretary was telling me about all the equipment that had broken down. And I didn't think we wanted to go into housekeeping. But I have a copy. But we haven't printed copies for everyone. It's this big. And so, yes, it's here. It's all here, and I'm just clarifying that indeed it is everything we asked for, so that we can, at some stage, I don't want to rely on you have to win this equipment. I think you can respond to that yourself, Mr. Hermans.
I think hopefully today there will be a matching result and we'll make a conference.
It is here. It's all here, and we're waiting. I'm sorry about that. And I just request that this matter is expedited. So that was very quick. Thank you, Honourable Harris. We're now immediately going to go across to National Gambling Board, and we're going to welcome, we've got here, of course, we know all the people, but I'm wanting to get them effectively in line, and that's Miss Baby Twala, I thought it was, but I see it's a bit different here. Professor Linda De Vries, Chairperson, Advocate Glockliso, Legal Advisor. If you could just show me who you are. I don't know everyone, thank you. And Mr. Timber, is that an S? Marasha? Or is it Marasha? Oh, okay. Yeah, what is that? Is it a G, S, or is it the Sutu?
It's Mahasha, pronounced Mahasha.
So, Mahasha, Chief Compliance Officer. You're all very welcome. You have been engaging with members of our committee already. And it's over to yourself to, I think, we know the space you've been here before, but just to remind you that I hope everyone had a program. Your opportunity to share with us this is 20 to 10, and we need to complete your input by 5 across quite a lot of time here, but I think we can give you about 20 minutes, thank you, to maximum of half an hour, but if you aim for 20 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity for us to respond to the Gaming Review Commission's findings. I think it would be appropriate just to say that it was timely for the Gaming Review to Commission to provide us with their findings, because I think as a country we needed to assess whether we achieved the objectives that as set, both economically as well as in terms of our transformation agenda, as well as in terms of the issues of addressing illegal gambling, and I think largely we've addressed that. And I'll come and talk a little bit about some of the new forms of gambling that obviously is part of the new frame of illegal gambling. And I think we as a country needed to just understand how are we doing as a country in terms of gambling, as a country as a whole. Part of the Gaming Review Commission's report has highlighted, I think, the new forms of gambling as well as new forms of technology, and those changes has obviously provided new challenges in terms of the illegal gambling and issues around that. I think, as Chair, I just want to indicate that we believe that it's important that we do have a national framework for gambling in the country, that we must act within the national agenda and the national priorities, that I think the challenges link to the concurrent competencies between provinces and the National Gambling Board, particularly in the area of gambling, are issues that are critical, because I think that part of where we are at as a country is you do not want, we need to make a choice around what is whether the parts are greater than the whole, or whether the whole will provide us with at least the framework within which we will set limits, both on limits of casinos, limits of gambling, bingo seats, limits of LPM, limits in terms of horse racing, limits in terms of the interactive gambling, or whatever mode of gambling we would want to have within the country. It is very important that a national body is there for oversight, which must assist, I think, in this case, because we report to DGI, and that's where we get our mandate from. And the National Gaming Board is guided by the Act of Parliament, which is the National Gambling Act 7 of 2004. And I think this is very important because that provides us with a frame of reference to make sure we provide oversight, we have harmonization, and we develop the norms and standards necessary for the area of gambling. I think lastly, before I give over to the rest of my team, I think there's a need for us to have a national body, or at least a national framework where all forms of gambling contribute to the consequences, the unintended consequences of gambling. And I think for the first time, the Gambling Review Commission has included the lotto in their description of gambling. And so part of the is our National Responsible Gambling Program, is a program that particularly the world-class program that addresses responsible gambling, both through research, through treatment, and through a public awareness. And we believe that that body, every mode of gambling should contribute to such a functioning and such a service delivery within the country. I think with those introductory remarks, I would like to give over to our CEO, Baby Chawa, to lead us with some of the specific data and things within the framework of gambling.
Thank you, Chair Clifton, thanks to the committee. Indeed, we have been working with the committee for a while now. The way in which we have compiled our presentation was to look at exactly what we did once we got the GRC report, SNGB. This slide shows you that once we got the draft GRC report, we realized that a lot of that content in that report was largely secondary research. We did then commission a whole study for South Africa, which we thought was critical, and the portfolio committee had indicated that there isn't an indication of a comprehensive data for the country. We actually are proud to say that we're sitting at a point where we actually have got quantitative data that shows you the patterns of the size and the shape of the gambling industry in the country. And I must hasten to say that we were able to pull together reports from the various sectors and also actually use primary research by doing interviews of the various sectors in the industry. We are also sitting with data that we think is important that we share with the Ministry of Trade and Industry. One of the things that the Minister continuously argues around is that this industry is galloping ahead of the GDP. And we have given that comprehensive report to the Portfolio Committee, as well as back to the Minister. We've also, in line with that, made a first wave of research where we're looking at the propensity of South Africans to gamble. And we used a wholly representative case sample of 3,500 people in the country, deep rural areas, to look at the of gambling and what is it that they gamble about. And our research is beginning to show us that, in the next slide, which I will show later on, then go back, to show us that, first, positive, South Africans are not over gambled, and we'll share data with yourself. So we've got that. Those two sets of research that we're quite confident will actually assist us to derive what can inform the portfolio committee, what can inform policymakers in this country to decide on what do we regulate and what we not regulate. With respect to the GRC reports, I think my chairperson has referred to a few of those things. I think it does affirm that regulation in this country is going well. It does actually affirm that we have done the best that we can. It does recognize and approve the fact that the responsible gambling program, notwithstanding the challenges it has, it is working in this country, although we do agree with some of the recommendations in the report. It also does say that we need a comprehensive strategy that would guide the national responsible gambling program, and I must hasten to say that in the foundation, the NGP has actually given as strategy to the foundation of the Responsible Gambling Program. Our aim is that that foundation and the National Responsible Gambling Program should be national. It should also be informed by the needs and the wants of regulators as well as the needs and the wants of the industry. And we also are recommending that we revive what is called the Advisory Council. We also realize that the report does articulate particular concerns around proximity and access of some sectors of gambling with respect to where people stay. I referred earlier on to this research that we've done. Just a quick background methodology. We commissioned research with Ipsos Nacional, and the first work was done around March and April. It is a sample based on 3,500 representative samples, weighted back to the population of the adult population of South Africa, which is 34 million people above the age of 18. We have a few questions in it. I will not waste your time on that. But we actually generated a multi-response question that asks people about what is it that they can go on. But the good news about this is at least 68% of the population of South Africa do not gamble or reported not to be gambling. I must say reported not to. And 31% of people say they gamble more than once or twice. And we have a whole demographic breakdown of that. I will not waste your time on that. This is the first wave to a person. We are now into the second wave, and we will actually have a tracked process. We're going to track the patterns of gambling the country. We want to see exactly areas where we don't know much about, and we see that people are actually practicing some activity of gambling. As I said that 68% of the population don't gamble, and if you look at data again, it tells you that a lot of those who gamble are in metro, less so in rural areas, and less so in non-metro. And we have data that gives you the various gender, education, income. We can use a whole range of variables and do cross-tabulations and show you. And we think that to us, this is a tool that we do want to work particularly with national lotteries to look at how we can actually use those data. I think what is also important is we realize that regulation must be balanced. The regulation of gambling, rather, must really be balanced. On the one hand, we have to be aware of the impact that gambling does have on people, and we should also be aware of the fact that it is an industry that is contributing constructively in the country. Then we can continuously navigate that amicable balance all the time. And we do find ourselves in sometimes between the hard place and the rock and the hard place. As regulators, well, we don't make policy. However, we need to ensure that we don't stifle the industry, whilst on the other hand, we're protecting the public. This is the data that I was referring to, which is still the first wave, and the committee has got a breakdown of that report that I sent to you. As indicated, we also corroborated, actually looked at a research that was done at the Eastern Cape in 2009, and realized that there is actually alignment in terms of findings there. There's a specific question that asks people, how long are you prepared to walk for to a place of gambling, and there's a response to this, and issues of proximity to actually come out of that. And we think it's quite a good research for the Eastern Cape Gambling Board to have commissioned. We don't think it was used quite effectively to inform a whole range of things there. And it was a representative sample of the Eastern Cape province on its own. We do think that it is important that we work with the national lotteries and we ensure that we counter negative effects of gambling and we place stricter monitoring control around places of gambling right across. The overview of the findings, I think we have actually mentioned that. I will not waste your time on this one. I think it is important for the committee to know that we now have evolved as NGB a dashboard that is still not automated, which will actually have various inputs that we're going to be sharing on a regular basis with the DTI, obviously. I've also said that it is important that we adopt a comprehensive strategy for the NRTT, and that's what the report was. With respect to specific things also, the report I've talked to the fact that corporate industry should be brought into the regulatory framework, we agree with that. And we are quite aware that there's a lot of work that has been done in this area. We would like the portfolio committee to proceed with documents that we've already sent to yourself on the work that has already been done and look at how we actually revisited that area of National Horse Racing Authority and regularizing that. We are aware that there was work that kept on coming on topic, and we were asked by the working committee to submit some of those documents. Some may be dated, but it would be useful to actually not start from scratch. The other recommendation on the GRC is about PTP betting. We just think that it is important that we note that, and that for as long as there's no policy around this area, that is an area that does impact on the overhaul of the legislation. And in fact, it also touches on online gambling. The GRC report talks about extracting, I think it says something like the NGB should become the secretariat support of the DTR. We do not think that is actually a correct recommendation. We just think it's important to separate policy from regulation. We just think that as a country, you do need a national institution that can exercise oversight. We'll be the only country that doesn't have a national institution. Actually, countries have one protocol, they have got one single jurisdiction, we've got 10 in terms of gambling. But we actually think what is very critical is that we actually create uniform norms and standards, and almost like a blueprint for the gambling industry, something that has not been there. Whilst the Act itself does have minimum standards, but we realized, I think the chair yesterday was sharing with the working committee to say that because of the lack of a blueprint, every province has got anything and they do anything in their act whenever they want to. An example of the introduction of electronic bingo, where the province just changed their act and set in what they wanted to put into their act. And we think it's also got to do with what my chairperson didn't mention, the fact that the NGB regulates provinces chase revenue. And the irony is that we all report to politicians. And we think maybe this is a place where politicians have got to find a mission of their minds, but we will not go into that terrain. We are public servants. The other point that we think is quite important is that we think with respect to internet gambling or online gambling, we really do require mutual cooperation across multiple institutions. We don't want to run and go find skills outside the country. We have NGB arguing that they have skills within the country. And we've actually thought that it is important that we find people who have knowledge of movement of money, knowledge of verification of players. Part of that information and knowledge is in the NGB. Because we have property, we've got people who are pros before they open any game institution or who have to operate an institution. We think that we have to improve RICA, consider the Consumer Protection Act. We have been talking quite a while, Chairperson, with the Department of Communications, and we have identified that they had a unit called Cybercrime, but unfortunately it's only meant by one person, the Department of Communications. Because we wanted to have a meeting with at least the ICASA, so we had to understand, also to block the existing internet service providers that are actually offering South Africans illegal online gambling, when in fact it's not regulated yet. We also think that we need to be talking about communication strategies that can ensure monitoring and verification of content, because we do know that one of the reasons why the legislation got stuck in Parliament. Parliamentarians asked us then, I haven't been at the NGB, but I was briefed by my colleagues. They were asked, how are we going to protect a single internet user in their house and make sure that young, underage children do not steal adult cards, a credit card? That was the question that was asked. And apparently, once we couldn't offer proper explanation, the whole thing got unstuck. As a result, that is the reason we also collect connecting and working with the Reserve Bank, I'm not hasten to say we are working with the Reserve Bank, we are working with the Banking Council, particularly to address illegal activity. We also think that, I think we come to a point where we've had this regulatory framework, we've gotten legislation that's quite tight, but what then happens, Chairperson, is that it's not able to accommodate innovation, because this industry is innovative. From the evolution of the Bophuthatswana gambling side, that's how far they got exposed to during apartheid era, to what you see now in the casinos. It's a complete advancement of technology. And we think that it is important that we continuously be aware that our regulatory framework must accommodate innovative and emerging trends without necessarily allowing for penetration of illegal activities. Because if we do not have innovation, we are aware of regulators that technology will gallop ahead of us. However, I think we need to have a sense that our regulations do accommodate that and make it easy for us so that we don't go to the principal act and try and change it, but have regulations that allow for such adaptations when it's necessary. I also think that we need additional gambling laws to be informed by research. And why do we say that, Chairperson, that often when there's a new mode of gambling, we don't get given some economic model that says the South African community of citizens can absorb this activity. We don't think the sufficient projections or maybe economic analysis or models that say, why do we want to introduce this mode of gambling, not that other one. We don't think that is done sufficiently, and we think it's important that outside us people can do it. My chairperson has referred to the alignment of legislation. Indeed, the GRC report, part of the reason why they were saying that the NGB is the commission, I must say. The data collected was quite contradictory. Part of the people were saying, why does the NGB have to exist? Because we are toothless bulldog. Maybe correctly so. However, the history of this country. I think the history is always forgotten that when the NGB was formed, the provinces already had the act. It was extremely difficult for us to claw back our authority. As a result, a lot of the things that we were sharing with the committee yesterday are documents that we produced as the NGB and gone on brotherly shakes, brotherly agreements, and that didn't work for it still doesn't work. However, we do have our provincial gambling boards working with us, but we don't agree on everything. We don't have to agree on everything. But there must be consensus. We align our legislation and we agree with the GRC. But that chairperson shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there are national priorities of this country informed by a development agenda. So that when we do work as regulators, we must be aware that we are public servants, unfortunately, and we use the fiscal, and therefore first priority should be what is important for the country, and not necessarily what is important for the province. However, we will leave that to the committee to talk about. The one other thing that we thought should highlight is when we introduce any activity of gambling, we should be sure that sector is not given any competitive advantage. And in this regard, we were referring to modes of gambling that may not have regulatory frameworks and therefore can't determine, or we as regulators haven't determined their investment, haven't determined what they must contribute in terms of social responsibility, haven't determined the number of seats, and so on and so forth. And we're finding ourselves in a fix now with the introduction of bingo, and we have been having conversations with the DGI on how we introduce the regulation around that. Chairperson, we actually do agree that there is an IT legislation before Parliament that the Chair has already spoken with, and we think that it needs to be considered, because the absence of such a framework actually will continue to impact negatively on the public. And that we also need effectiveness of prohibition, which has to, as it is now, we need effectively to address illegal activities in the country. because those people who exist in other places making unlawful games at adult.com. The next data I will just share with you, the penetration of internet gambling. These are just data that we got from the South African Advertising and Research Foundation. They do regular data on the penetration of internet in the country. And the black graph is cell phone penetration, the blue is internet penetration. I can tell you that there is a definite increase there, just from the look of it. And then it gives a breakdown of who actually accesses that. Number four is of most concern to us. A year ago, there was nothing called social network. You wouldn't find a significant base on social network. Today, we're sitting with 8% of the population accessing social networks. And of course, the data from 2011 is putting access to internet at 13.7% as the recent data of 2011 June. That data then tells you who are the people who are active on social networks. And you can see clearly that 40% of those are from the ages of 15 to 24. The recommendations we have, in line with the recommendations of the GRC, as I had already indicated, the first thing is that retain the NGB and it becomes a repository of gambling matters, and it creates an information portal. We also think that we should coordinate research and communication around the NRGP. We think that we would like the lottery board to be part of us, of course, that we have a similar program for public awareness, as well as dealing with the responsible gambling in the country. The methodologies and the mechanics can be dealt with later on. We also think that we need to have synergies around things that relate to online, such as sports pooling and so on and so forth. We're not making a support or name in terms of P2P, in terms of DRC, because we have argued that there's no policy, and it is actually online activity. And that we are aware that IG is borderless, and we cannot continuously just oppress and manipulate. Chairperson, the last bullet point here we have on this slide is about the council. That the policy council, indeed, we are doing. We have council's two meetings, primarily because that forum doesn't collect. And besides quarantine, the decisions of the councils normally bind the National Gambling Board, but never bind legally the Provincial Gambling Board. Yet, it is a forum that has got NEC with the non-provinces, and we think that should definitely change. It should, no, it doesn't. We are the ones who are supposed to implement all the council decisions, but provinces are not necessarily, they can ignore it because it is not in line with their end. So we think that the muted payout machine, the report says we must increase the stakes. However, we would like to start off with something that we say we should actually look at the funding model. We have identified some problems with the funding model as NGB, and we have a memo that we will share with Parliament to say, before we even talk about the stakes, let's correct something within the LPM model, which we thought is a bit of a misnomer, and our board did receive that misnomer and discussed it. We think that at present there is bingo. That has to be regulated properly. It has to have a national framework that dictates a set investment like any other gambling, so that it's not a runaway. We think that we cannot ignore that, because provinces have actually advertised calling for more applications for bingo. So if we don't have a national framework, we will obviously have provinces with proliferation. And obviously we shall have lots on our work. There's also an issue of the taxation policy, it's inequality of taxation. We recommend that there should be uniformity. We know this is not our area. It is the ETI and national treasurers that will have to deal with that matter. But it's quite important that we flag it. Clearly, the BBBEE is a policy of the country. We think that the industry has to abide by the policies of the country. But we think that our role as NGB is to work with these sectors and have them committed to various ways in which they can meet the BBBEE. party was there, probably. We cannot necessarily say, accept the fact where sectors say, but we can't meet 2015 level 2. We rather would sit down with them and say, what is it that you can do to ensure that at least your industry does work in a country where it is a policy. We have spoken about alignment. We think that part of what we should do in regulation is have regulations that are technology neutral. There's a point that the GRC doesn't talk to. I'm right at the end here. The GRC doesn't talk to the laboratories. So also we have two independent laboratories, and so that is in terms of testing gaming machines. We have a recommendation here. And this arises by the fact that sometimes we find contradictory reports for the two laboratories, this one saying this particular device may not be meeting these particular standards. We want to propose a way in which government finds partnership or government finds a way of getting back the SADS to do some of the testing or get it outside as a wild actually educated that you can't have a person who sets standards to also test, which makes a lot of sense. But we as government need a space where we can have neutral set opinion on particular equipment wherein the two laboratories that are being used do not necessarily agree. And we're flagging that because it is a lacuna in the GRC recommendation. With respect to illegal gambling, we're saying that we're going to work hard to blacklist those that we can find, so that particularly around online gambling, so that those who have been abiding by the laws of the country are not finding themselves compromised. The GRC talks about research on farming. We think that research should be for public awareness. I don't know how I grew up in the town. My granny paid farming for Northern Ireland. That was 5 pence then. You know, there were still pence from the UK. And the view of farming is that a lot of grannies who paid do not know and do not think that it is family. The denominations are little. I think it's the best, it's 20 cents now, 85 cents, or 50 cents. I'm not sure. But the concern is, we have as NGO, is that there could be illicit crime. If we look at the trends of Limpopo, the arrests that are made there, they're not taken seriously. So there's no conviction, there is fine. So they move from one place to the other. When they get raided, the example was given by the CEO of Limpopo, and practicing crafty person got raided, only 34,000 drugs found in his house. Surely some money is being washed through that system, it's being legitimized through that system. Our concern is it could be that it feeds into illicit crime. Chair, we did actually raise this. I think the minister even advised that we should, as the NGB, meet with the cabinet committee on illicit crime. I think there is such a forum, I'm not sure. But that there is actually a ministry committee that deals with illicit crime. So we think that what's important, we as regulators must do a lot of public education. Police must do their work. We should also highlight it as maybe a likely channel of illegal money coming in and out of the country. In conclusion, Chairperson, the proposal that the NGB should make with NLP, we know that these are two different entities. What we haven't reflected here is that we have our own trauma with the Act. The lotteries have their own trauma with the Act. We don't think that you take two things, amend them, and correct. We think that we should be given space to correct as NGD and reposition ourselves as a strategic institution and do the rest that we're supposed to do and fulfill our mandate. We do also, however, we actually know, first we know, Chairperson, that the UK merged their lotteries with gambling. From 2005, they didn't use their act. It is only now that they are now one unitary institution, merging lotteries and gambling. We call it the UK Commission on Gambling Lotteries. We know that it can take, it is possible. However, at this stage, we think that it's important that we get our housing order and actually get our act working and doing what we, however, think that it is critical that the two institutions do collaborate in terms of research, in terms of responsible gambling, in terms of using our registers of exclusion, because the NGV does have registers of machines in the country, for instance, of excluded persons when they are compulsive gamblers or prone gamblers. We also think that we should have shared views around advertisement and promotion. That we should actually have, there should be a use of probity registers, and I know that when I go to the NGV, that some of my colleagues have been working with the lottery quite often. We do agree that the whole act needs a complete overhaul. However, we are concerned that there are certain things that are proceeding in the various provinces. One of the things that we shared with the committee yesterday, Chairperson, was we do need to know we cannot control provinces. We can't say to them, the process of the GRC public hearings is proceeding. Please do not do that. It's not in our authority to do that. But we think that it is actually within the authority of Parliament to do that. Because it is indeed true that there are certain things that are proceeding. There must be communication. The last thing that we did raise yesterday with the committee was that we definitely have a draft additional number standard. And we think that it's important to have a good code of best practices for regulation of the industry as a whole country. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Chawla, the CEO of the National Gambling Board, and indeed the chairperson, the full team, in fact, in this regard. And I think, Professor De Vries, that you know, your engagement with the CEO, perhaps you may not have been there yourself, with the subcommittee. Really, I'm sure they appreciate it as we do this morning. We appreciate this information that you have shared with the committee as a whole. But I know that a number of members will want to just raise some comments and perhaps questions, make comments and questions. So if you can, by show of hands, just indicate that we've got Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Harris, Honourable Smaller, just can't see the back. Honourable Khadebe.
Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Chawla. I'm sorry I've got a concrete pillar between us. And I could hear you perfectly, and thank you for that. I just have three questions. You did deal quite a lot with the online gambling and issues there, but in your beginning, in the summary, you say one of the things you've got to do is independent quantitative research to assess the size and shape of this industry. And then you've also got to report, do research to provide to Parliament on the gambling industry growth, grown over time, and the market share. Now, have you done any of that, Ms. Chawla, on the online banking? I mean, do we have any idea of what the turnovers are, what the extent of it is, and so on? And I noticed that, for example, on that interesting statistic you give us where incidents of gambling in South Africa, there's nothing on Interactive there that I've noticed anyway. The second question is, you talk about regulation must be balanced, and then you talked about an amicable balance. I wonder if you could explain that to me, and what would you regard as inimical, which is the opposite of amicable, what would you regard as non-amicable balance? And then the third question is, you talk about an over-gambled country, and you say South Africa is not over-gambled. Could you give me an example of what you would regard as an over-gambled country? And I'm not talking about Las Vegas or Goa. I'm talking about a country. Thank you.
I understand, put it this way, recognizing that we're the legislators and it's up to us to amend laws if we see fit, I would appreciate your advice.
you have to act, you have to work within the existing legislative framework. You heard the discussion earlier in the administration side of the committee about whether we actually want to set out to now amend these laws or not, or this law. And I think there is a feeling amongst the committee that we need to do it sooner rather than later. What is your view on the current issues with the legislation? And then related to that, the idea that you heard the chair of the working group bring up, that perhaps we legislate for interactive gambling separately, or online gambling, whichever the one that's the problematic one, that we legislate for it separately from the existing laws. I'd like your views on that, as the people who are going to have to administrate many of those laws. I understand your point about using the NGB to solve some of the problems in the National Lottery Board, but the Commission specifies that the National Lottery Board is conflicted between their regulatory functions, which they don't do properly, and their administration of the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund, which they also don't do properly. And that the Commission suggests that because they've got these two focuses, that perhaps it makes sense for, I guess, the regulatory functions to come in under the NGB. To me, that seems relatively neat. It doesn't solve the problem of the distribution, but I guess we'll get to that later today. What would you think to incorporate simply the regulatory functions? Provincial coordination, I can see it must be frustrating for you. You're a national body, you have 9 provinces, and many of them are doing things, as provided for in the legislation, as they see fit rather than as you see fit. But I'm interested, what is the real cost of this? What is actually going on? Are there some provinces that don't have the capacity to administrate gambling properly, so there's illegal things happening? Are we not regulating problem gambling sufficiently? What are the real costs of this? I understand it's frustrating for you, but it doesn't have a real cost. And lastly, your point about the single national point of contact. I would imagine many countries actually devolve gambling to their provinces. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the US is probably the most prominent example where the states actually are responsible for gambling. And I don't know if the US even has a national coordinating function. I would appreciate your view on it, but Chair, also perhaps it's something we can ask our researchers to look at, which is the kind of international precedent for regulating gambling essentially or devolved to provinces. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honourable
Smart. Thank you very much for your comments.
Yes, Chair. I think I want to start with why introducing the norms and standards now? Why not earlier? Why not be a bit more proactive, much earlier in your campaign up till now, until the Act was actually proclamated in 1994? Has there been discussions between yourself and DTI, including the National Lottery Board, concerning the contribution towards responsible gambling and the funding module, the funding module that could be used to agree to that, and the marketing of the specific sector towards problem gambling. Is there some cohesion being met to finalise that issue? My third issue is going towards one of your recommendations right to the end, your illegal gambling towards the online illegal activity. Is the Electronic Communication Transaction Act efficient for you presently to stop those type of activities, yes or no? And if not, should it be taken up in that section of the Act to be strengthened, or do you see it in the new legislative framework under the Gambling Review Act, where you would then need teeth should the committee want to assist you in order to, for you to do your work that it comes from there. I just want to try to understand where we need to look into formalize or to give the NGB more assistance in that specific regard. The rest I don't want to repeat. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honourable
Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, first of all, I said we'll have to appreciate this report, which is delivered by the National Gambling Board. But what is critical there, Chairperson, is the issue of, I want to comment the issue of norms and standards. The issue of norms and standards has been done as of yesterday. Why? Simply because South Africa is not a federal state. We cannot allow the provinces to run amok in this country. Because the constitution is very clear. That's why we're having these things, these elements which are known as min-max. When the national ministers and the MEC of the provinces come together to sit and decide on policy and coordinate. So the issue of normal standards is very critical. You must have done that long time ago. But at the same time, the report is showing a disturbing trend whereby the provinces, similarly, they are on their own. They can do whatever they want to do. Right now, we are dealing with the issue of interactive gambling. I think that is the new species altogether which we are dealing with. Are there any provinces which have given licenses for interactive gambling, as far as you know? Because seemingly that we don't have control over it. Number two, it will be the issue of yourself wanting the measure of the National Lottery Board and the National Gambling Board. I think that the National Gambling Board is basically regulating the private type of gambling, whereas the National Lottery Board is dealing with a public mandate, whereby its funds actually go back to the public health so that it can help the public. So how are we going to reconcile the two? How can you, because seemingly you tend to deal with it. You know, when you deal with the casinos, those profits, they go to them, to the shareholders. When you go to the National Gambling Board, the process of the gambling board of the NLB does not go to the directors of the NLB. Instead, they go to the charities, although they must be inefficient in doing that. But there's a clear difference between the two. So, and then number two, with these problems which are inherent within the National Gambling Board, whereby, as you said, that is a toothless bulldog, and then the NLB itself has got problems. These institutions, they've got serious capacities, they've got serious weaknesses. So when you bring them together at the same time, are you not going to amplify their weaknesses instead of trying to empower them individually so that they run properly and then get strong? And then on the issue of, part of this thing, being a regulator, I think that what is also critical is the economic transformation of the country. I think that from what was presented in the previous presentations from the other presenters, we can see that this industry remains untransformed. I'm sorry to say that, because when coming to the issue, assuming that the historically disadvantaged people are only considered as hunters or as groomers of the horses, but when coming to the ownership, it's not there to get upon. What institutions have done as a regular show ensure that really we cannot have South Africa of 2011 being the same as South Africa of 1978. There must be a radical shift on that. What did the regulator do around that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of points from myself here. There was a statement made by the CEO that the council, quote, never corrects. And I'm just asked to get the full list of council members here. I'm not sure why they're still around then if they can't correct. And we do need to perhaps just to look into that issue. And I would like that clarified in case it may have been possibly a little stretching. And then there were a few other points being made about, in fact, there were several lacuna in the GERC, the gambling, sort of commission that we had up here. I mean, the statement on your last page, or rather that the Act requires a complete overhaul to address all the identified lacuna, and then there were one or two mentioned with respect to the GRC itself. I don't recall you noting this list of the lacuna in the Act, unless perhaps that was a broader statement on your part per se. The other thing which, if I may just very quickly, you referred to the research that was done, as such, the survey maybe being done by Markinu, I think. And you did make a couple of references to the manner in which the sample, or how the research was done. But I just wondered, in fact, I was somewhat surprised at the figure of nearly 70%, you know, I'm sure you were yourself. And it does, you know, ask all of us when we hear a figure like that to say, well, what kind of survey was done. There are a lot of different forms of surveys, and while I think with all of us respect Markinu as a reputable organization in this area, I mean, we all know that. Nevertheless, they are asked to run various forms of surveys, etc., and I'm not sure just what the parameters of this may have been. It was almost a snapshot type of thing, or what it was. And it could have been quite pertinent for us, especially as we are leaning on some of these figures, to get a clarification in that regard. Certainly, I think the point is made that we both share the position that national legislation does require a radical review. I don't think there is a doubt in anyone sitting here, and that we have to respect the Constitution, though, with the aspects of concurrent legislation existing as they do within the national sphere of government and the provincial sphere of government itself. Having said that, I would ask you very briefly to and succinctly to respond to the questions that have been raised, but not so succinctly that we don't have a proper explanation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I am also going to ask part of my team to respond to that, I think. However, let me just start off with the Markinu one. It is us who commissioned it, and it is a regular research that they did called the Kaya Bus. It is called Omnibus. It is samples along the census and the population estimates, meaning that they would then have used statistics as a census estimate of 2010 and 2011 before we did the new census. And they do it through enumerator areas. It is a 3,500 sample, which is weighted back to the adult population in South Africa. It has got all variables. That document, we did send, I think, the whole study to the office of the committee secretary. So they have that. So what I didn't do is waste your time to look at the variables, because you're just having to use the time economically. I wanted to get that data out of everything. So it is indeed useful to look at this in context. I must hasten to say that we did share the cost with Peter Collins, the NRGP, in the first week. The strength of that study, Chair, is that it's done every 6 months. So you can track. You can even track for the next 5 years the patterns of changes of gambling. Yeah. The other studies that are in the GRC report, I'm not actually explaining, were done largely on metropolitan samples. They did not include sampling in the deep rural areas. And these are the ones that I referred to in the GRC report. A lot of them. Even the NGB did that. We also used the BR UNISA, and a lot of the data, the sample was based on urban areas. And this is quite robust. sport, it can be immoral, but if it was a continuing threat of research. But the point is that we do have a full report, and I think I can deal with another research that Mr. Member McIntosh was referring to. The size and shape of the industry, that complete report was sent to the committee, Mr. Hiram. So it's got the whole section on what is out there, what are the big competitors in the industry, various sections of your limited payout machine owners, grid operators, site operators. It's quite an extensive report. It's about 169 pages of a report. So we did send it to the committee. I think it took a while to transmit through the parliament, and we had to send it through other way. And let me just go on and address a few other things. Chair, let me start with your point. We agreed with the council that we will provide them the lacuna. Indeed, we have a template. Yesterday we said to them, they asked the same question, to say, if we were to overhaul this legislation, what are the things that are fundamental that are definitely impacting on our work? We've agreed that instead of enumerating them now, we will submit a template that we've kept over time that shows areas of weakness in the Act as it says. And obviously, we will submit our wish list, not that it will be things you can entertain as well, but we will submit our wish list. Let me go to Member Khadebe. Why the number standards now? The Act as it says has got minimum number standards. What NGV has done over time is through the council we have submitted general agreements on how we should work together as provinces in a brotherly way. What we're asking for now is that they should be gazetted so that it becomes a group trade. And we agree, we always argue with the provinces to say we're not a federal state, we are a United States, we have one constitution. However, there are concurrent competencies in the constitution. So if you look at our size and the mapping of the industry study, it shows you that revenue on gambling is the second, I think after the fiscal, it's the second contributor to the provincial fiscal. So it's quite a critical area that they drive revenue, we drive regulation, we are bound to clash. However, if we have national laws and standards that are going to parliament, that is the policy of what to do and what not to do, first we will have very good relationships, we will not be fighting, but not that we're fighting. We will be driven by one priority as a country. We can't be forecast to say that the priorities of this government are fine. One of those is education. Can the gambling revenue go and build schools in SMP? You know, we can contribute to the development of the country than conflict on revenue. But we can't do it if it's a paper that we took to council and agreed in principle. And we keep running to DTI when there are problems. So please help us, we are now going to fight. We don't want to do that, otherwise we will remain an ineffective institution. So we need a bit of that muscle. I think in our presentation we do say very clearly that Member Khadebe, that we can't merge lotteries and NGV now. Indeed, let's talk for ourselves as NGV. There are a whole range of things that we need to build in terms of skills, resources, and finances and strategy in our institution. So we can't just go and merge with our province and then. However, it would be nice to really have one single regulatory function in one area that deals with regulation of forms of gambling, including lottery. It would be nice. However, at the state, I think our NGV needs to be strengthened because we do have quite a lot of things that we could do better. Yes, we agree with you. Hence, one of the things we flag there is we're going to work with the industry to look at transformation in the various sectors, in the various pillars of DE in particular, and then we will have to work with the Labour Department to look at equity. I do know that some of my colleagues have started doing that. In terms of, Mr. Member Suarez spoke about equity, I'm going to ask Professor to deal with that. In terms of the Act itself, what do you want to do with?
I would like to, you know, your question around whether we, what is America doing, and because it's a federal state, but on the issue of online gambling, for instance, interactive gambling, as a country, they have prohibited. And so in the whole country, in all the federal states, on interactive gambling was not allowed. So even though each federal state has the right to operate within their own jurisdiction and develop their own model for gambling in their specific unit, in the country, that is a country, interactive gambling wasn't allowed. There is a report from 2010 from done by KPMG on interactive gambling, particularly in the USA, because they are also looking at that. This is not something that you can wish away. It happens, even though it's illegal, and particularly in America, they try to block every banking transaction that goes through to jurisdictions because it was illegal by their side. Yes, it was illegal in some other jurisdictions. So that is a report that I think a person must go and study and see, because there's valuable insights around us regularizing and making it legal in this country. Just as part of the interactive gambling, if you go onto any website, there's about 15 on the South African WW South African webpage. There's 15 online casinos, even though it's illegal in this country. Even though we have won court cases on, particularly between Big Creek and again. If you go on the website now, there would be last week there was 15 online casinos in South Africa offering online gambling. So that's, I think, on the one hand. She would speak on the interactive group. Let me just talk around the contribution from the National Responsible Gambling Program and whether we've invited and had conversations with the Lotto around that contribution. We have invited it from the inception. This body was set up so that there's representation from industry as well as the regulatory bodies, national as well as provincial. So that's the overarching body that oversees the research, the treatment, and the public awareness around it. The Lotto, as we speak, still two seats available, which they have never taken up, both in our national, in the board, as well as in the advisory council, and they have never contributed to it. So it has always been an invitation, because we believe the work we do in the National Responsible Gaming Program is, as we say, world-class. It's been copied around the world. It is a one-of-a-kind where industry contributes to it, but it's an independent body that makes sure that there's no vested interest around, but that we look at the interests of the country on how we look at the research we do, we treat problem and responsible gambling, and how we make sure there's a national footprint that will allow, whether you're in rural or urban areas, be able to have access to treatment centers or at least counselors around that area. So I think, let me just talk about whether we're an over-gambled country, and you were looking for an example of that. As we speak, Australia is almost on the back foot right now, because they started off, and if you go to Australia, any of the cities, you know, they started off because they had good causes, all these poker machines with clubs and societies. It was always good benefits to sports and all of those things. But they are over-gambled country because as a regulatory framework and their own National Policy Council and Authority on Productivity are now saying that's too much. But how do we how do you backtrack to reduce the number of official sites that you have licensed and official sites that is gambling available? And I think, so we're not yet an over-gambled country. Australia definitely is an example of that. They as a country acknowledge that and are looking for means to address that, particularly in very, very tight movements within Australia. Even there's even a political party called anti-gambling around, and they have a huge public campaign on anti-gambling. Now, we're not there yet. But within that, maybe I must just say, so we're definitely not an over-gambled country, but Australia is an interesting model. And has got robust research that helps us to say that's not what we want to have. And we don't want to first get there before we say that's enough. Now, I want to just, in my last concluding remark, say given our concurrent competencies between provinces and the National Gaming Board, and given the constitutional imperative, you ask, what is then the problem? Because that is the constitutional framework. We believe the National Gambling Act, and you as the policymakers, should provide the broad framework about, like, one, how many casinos in a country? Secondly, how many seats in a country? Three, should we have online interactive gambling or not? Should we have bingo? Should we have electronic bingo terminals? And how many of them? And how do we want them to be? Do we want them to be close to a shopping center, or do we want them to be in places that are not as accessible as everybody? What is the imperative that's linked to it, and how do we differentiate? And I think my CEO has started to talk about there must be like with like. If we say we expect the casino to make an investment of, and the Casino Association has given you the numbers, let's say, for instance, an investment of 100 million rand for the right to have a casino, then clearly there must be a comparative investment by any of the other modes of gambling on the right to operate that mode of gambling. So if EBTs have 100 seats or 600 seats and they don't make that comparative infrastructure investment and any corporate social investment other initiative, then we are not in a fair and equal country in the way we give the right that we have as a country for gambling. That is the challenge, because the provincial regulators, because they have a current competency, have changed their acts. For instance, to give licenses to EBTs in Gauteng, and as we speak, there's call for proposals in Cape KwaZulu-Natal, as well as in the Eastern Cape, as well as in Mpumalanga. So because they say it's concurrent, they may do it, there are no national regulations. We don't even know how we want that model to look in this country. Do we want to limit it to 40 sites in the country, or 30 sites with 3,000 seats, like we've done with limited payout machines? We've done that. Limited payout machines, we did. Provinces, we have the right. Because remember, we did two things. And I think what we haven't done is to see how each of these modes fit within the gambling framework. That the modes that we have is casinos, which is large infrastructure, and linked to it is a whole number of complexes that provide great jobs. At the tail end of that, we have limited payout machines, which was linked to existing primary businesses, maximum of 5. And the moment this, our legislative framework says, the moment it's more than 5, it should come nationally. Now, again, nationally, they should get approval from the National Gambling Board, because that's what we saw these models fit together in the country. However, and I think those are some of our challenges within the provinces as well as, I want, I think, to talk about the
electronic.
Thank you, Chairperson. This piece of legislation, the Electronic Communications Transactions Act, it deals with a range of matters that include security, cybercrime, protection of personal information, etc. And the NGB was indeed of the view that it empowers the Department of Communications to some extent, provides guidance and assistance. It does give it substantive background to assist us in this regard. We did feel that through the interception and monitoring of communication, through the use of cyber inspections, that they have a department that measures and monitors websites, such activities on information systems that go to the public domain would indeed be monitored effectively. Secondly, the other issue that we looked at within that piece of legislation was that the information, the ISPs themselves should perhaps also be found liable under that specific piece of legislation for facilitating such illegal transactions and by way of providing access and hosting such facilities that are intended to transmit such information under their control. We, unfortunately, on engagement with the DOC, only learned that the cyber crime unit
was really at its infancy. And it's only now that they're recruiting cybercrime inspectors, and it's going to be quite some time before they're able to be at a point where they can be able to assist us. We also learned that the IHP is also regulated under ICASA. It is self-regulated for that matter. And it becomes quite difficult for them to, you know, introduce any form of punitive measures against them in the event they transgress our own legislation. I think the other critical issue that came out is that I think then it calls on us to perhaps provide better treatment through the National Gambling Act itself, as opposed to place much reliance on that piece of legislation. Because as it stands now, they're even looking at overhauling it because they think it also has quite a number of loopholes as it exists. The other issue that was raised around interactive gambling, you will recall that the approach that was taken so far as the regulation of interactive gambling by Parliament was that it should actually be introduced as a separate piece of legislation as opposed to amending the principal legislation. So to this extent, we really felt that because of the problems that we currently have in regulating IG, and the fact that we don't have a regulatory framework in place at this point in time, it may perhaps be ideal that Parliament looks at it separately outside the overhaul of the legislation, which might take quite some time. We should not forget that illegal operators are there. They may be licensed offshore, but in our country we deem them as illegal, and they are penetrating their market. We're trying as far as possible to try and prohibit them using, you know, law enforcement agencies and other entities, departments that we may place reliance on. But how effective this is something else. We think we have not really achieved much in this arena. The issue around the meta.
I think we've dealt with
that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, we just asked this at the time, and maybe there might be other issues that committee would like to raise.
Well, I do see
just a few minutes left, Honourable Sudebe. Chairperson, it's just the issue of my question not being answered.
Yes.
I asked a question whether, since the provinces are doing their own thing, is there any province which has issued an online gambling license? So that as we move forward, we know what anyone was dealing with. Thank you, Chair.
No, Chairperson, I can categorically say no. Hence, Gauteng should pick to court. The Gauteng Daily Board are the ones who initiated and picked that up. Definitely not. The other one I wanted to clarify, the Chairperson said, I use counsel never correct. And maybe I should say we have difficulties correcting. This year we've had to. The DTI are the secretaries, are the ones who coordinate that. But we did have two meetings cancelled this year. And last year, one meeting was downgraded to an ordinary meeting. But it's not within our purview as NGB to explain why and what. Thank you, Chairperson. I think these are I think we've treated, we've dealt with most of the questions indeed.
I think there may well be time when the subcommittee may wish to re-engage you in specific areas that we request that they pursue. What I should just, what I would just like to do is to ask the DDG, you know, I'm not sure whether this would fall directly under yourself, Secretariat of the Council, and whether you would know a little bit more about this, because this is quite alarming to hear why have we even got this council. Are they getting paid? Are they getting paid? Can you tell us?
Thank you. I guess they are getting paid because holding them as a political office parent. And the council in terms of the legislation comprises of the MECs responsible for gambling in the provinces, and it is chaired by the minister. And the reality is that this council is not effective. and why it's not effective. I think a lot of matters that relate to decisions that relate to issues like norms and standards, for instance, I think that should be discussed at the council and agreed upon. And if council does not create, there are no decisions. And for 2 years, we've been battling to get the council to create. And in regards to, we're saying this because this is the reality. We did do an attempt to where the minister sent letters, specifically raising a concern around that, because the fact that the council is not correcting actually obstructs a lot of decisions that should be taken. And while the decisions are not taken, what happens is that the provinces are moving ahead on various issues on a piecemeal basis. So I think if this issue is not dealt with, I think speedily, we're going to be sitting with a lot of problems in regards to the inconsistency that is happening in regards to gambling matters. But the council members are the MECs and the minister, and it is constituted in terms of the legislation. Thank you.
Really, we'll have to address the letter to the minister in this regard and do a complete clarification. But I mean, the basic principles here are being abused. I don't think this committee can say that, never mind the question of are we happy, are we satisfied, but we would almost be agreeing to fruitless, not even sure if it is as mild as fruitless expenditure, but far more serious forms of wastage. Yes, Honourable Obasa.
Let me just understand this. I understand that the MECs meet the minister as in a MINMET meeting. When do they become comfy?
Well, I want to actually get a letter from the minister to clarify this, because these are just ordinary appointees. But we're learning more and more about this legislation. Thank you, DEG.
I think I must just put this into the correct perspective. The National Gambling Act and the National Liquor Act, because of the nature of the industry and because of the concurrent jurisdiction, establishes this council in order to facilitate cooperative governance, so that the decisions that relate to all of these matters can be taken in that forum. But also some of the policy discussions have to begin in those particular council meetings. And we are saying that that meeting does not correct. And similarly, when we, because there was an attempt that we did to try and combine the MINMEC and make it the council meeting, but the agendas are so long that it becomes impractical. You cannot even squeeze them. But these are legislative meetings that should take place. They are in the legislation, and they should not be things that are relegated to as and when the ministers meet. They're supposed to happen. But we're saying that that structure doesn't work. It doesn't work as it is right now, so it needs to be reviewed. If we cannot have a quorum, we are unable to actually achieve what the legislation intended.
I think we've got at least an idea, but as you say, or as we said at the beginning, we have requested the radical review of this legislation. And clearly this is one of the areas we are going to just clarify this with the minister himself, but I don't think members were aware of the actual status, position and structure there of the council. I don't think any member here was. So I think it's pertinent that it has been shared, because a structure that is legislated needs to meet. But as we said, this legislation is old, and we do need to radically review it. I don't think we disagree on that. So what I am going to go back to the point of, I think the committee should write a letter to the minister seeking a clarification on the matter, so that it's quite clear, because as we know, there is a MINMEC. same time we have concurrent, the Constitution states clearly that this is a concurrent position and authority and power. So we have to work within that. You know, it's not as simple as other pieces of legislation that this committee has dealt with. And on the face of it, the structure, if it's a council is as simple as that. But it could be, we're asking to drive a car with three wheels, it should have four. It could be something that needs to radically change here. And we need to look at what is happening. So the letter, I think we do need to see the clarification from the minister urgently, for certainly no later than next week, on the matter itself. But I think that is simply one of the issues you've raised, one of them. There are many, many other serious issues that you have raised here. But just to thank you, first of all, for coming here. That is the National Gambling Board, and being here all along. In fact, members of your board have been here throughout the process, we must say. And I think that's going to prove extremely helpful in this regard. So thank you very much to all of you. The point that one just wants to share with the committee, because we haven't really had our minutes back from these meetings, all of them, we do know that those of us who were able to be at some of the meetings all of the time of the meeting, that we've already taken a decision that our staff, support staff, should do the researchers should do the bulk, but that other members of staff should assist in getting this information online. Do you recall that? I mean, that's a decision we've taken, but it's not all available, and it won't all be available, I think, until Tuesday for Manco completely, but some of it is available already from some members of the committee itself. But a case in point was the United States, which we already knew about, but also the whole credit card issue in Israel, and how they were trying to overcome it and things like that. So I don't want to, explore the information that we just got a taste of a week ago, because it is being pursued in this regard. But I think there was a study, Honourable Whip, referred to by the National Gambling Board, by that KPMG had conducted, in this regard on online. It may be pertinent, and I think also Honourable Corvasa, who heads up the subcommittee, to just see whether or not they could share that with ourselves. As much information as possible could be quite helpful. Well, otherwise, perhaps we could invite them and they could share that information with us as well. So thank you once again for being here. Members, it's at this point just 11 o'clock, and tea is available. We do want to finish on time, all of us. So can I please ask members to return within 10 minutes, please? Thank you. Thank you.
The license to operate the National Lottery is awarded. the criteria for awarding that license, and actually the way that the different types of games that constitute the portfolio of games that the operator offers to the public. The second recommendation made by the Kennedy Commission was the enforcement of all the lotteries, and that was focus number two. And obviously, we will elaborate on each one of these issues. The third one was the issue of governance of the distributing agencies, the way they are appointed, who they are responsible to, and who they are accountable to. The fourth recommendation was made, and the National Gambling Board alluded to this earlier on, was the issue of responsible gambling and excessive participation and pathological gambling, all those kinds of social issues. The fourth recommendation. The fourth recommendation was to do with the capacity, or so-called capacity of the NLB, and as a consequence of this, a recommendation to actually split the distribution from the regulation. So we will deal with that at the point as well. And the last recommendation that came out of the Commission's report and work was the issue of whether there should be a single regulator. So those are the six recommendations that were made by the Commission, and we will deal with each of them in turn. The first recommendation was that the current model of licensing and operation of the National Lottery should remain. And this, as you are aware, Jefferson, from the other hearings, is that it's the only form of gambling which is based on a revenue maximization model. We agree with the Commission that this model should remain. It is a robust, rigorous model that works. And in any event, the third license expires in early 2015, and the RFP for that license would be going on before the Act is amended. So it might be a bit late to actually look at different models. But our firm belief is that the model should remain. However, we believe there are some issues in the Act that needs to be corrected to make the model more practical, and these were issues that came out in 2007 when the license was set aside by the court. And the areas that need to be addressed is the issue of what is a political office bearer. There is a definition in the Act which is not exact, it's rather ambiguous, and this was exploited by unsuccessful people to set the license aside. So we need to strengthen what is in fact an office bearer, and whether a political office bearer can hold shares in the shareholder or the shareholder or the shareholder of the national lottery. Well, so that's one of the areas that need to be fixed. The other area that we find deficient in the Act in respect to the operation of the lottery is the approval of games. At the moment, the minister needs to approve all the games that is run by the national lottery. And that, for us, is an issue because it is the National Lottery Board that has the expertise and the experience of lotteries generally and the effect of games. And we have had problems in the future where, you know, we wanted to introduce trash-top games for Christmas, which we submitted in August, and it was approved the following May, so we actually missed the opportunity to have Christmas. So these are some of the issues that we have in the approval of games. We believe that it is possible that the minister could be allowed to authorize online games, but smaller games like scratch cards should be left forward. The other issue that we have in terms of the operation of the lottery is that the Act is very silent on interim arrangements. So when the license is set aside for whatever reason, or revoked for whatever reason, there is no provision in there currently for the lottery to continue. And this is a big issue, Jefferson, because in 2007, for the 6 months that the lottery did not operate, we lost R1 billion, and we never regained it. So we're actually R1 billion a year short now, because of that gap, because everyone else went to casinos and horse racing, all the other forms of gambling. So we agree that the model should change, but we would like these few issues that jigger the way that the license is issued to be changed. The second recommendation made, Jefferson, was to do with the enforcement of other lotteries, and again, we agree that there is a serious lack of provision in the current legislation about the authority of the NLB to chase and police some of these lotteries. We have had already a few cases in court where the locustenia of the board has been questioned. So we certainly agree with the recommendation that the enforcement provisions need to be strengthened. And together with that, if we have stronger definitions in the Act currently defines what is a lottery, but we have forms of lotteries that are proliferating, and when we take them on in court, it is always an argument about whether it is a lottery or not. So if we define these current SMS competitions, which are clearly lotteries, but they disguise as promotional competition, if we can refine those definitions so it is beyond doubt what is a lottery and what isn't, it would be easier then to police them. And this obviously would include the area of puppy, which was also raised earlier. The nature of puppy is that it is a lottery, so it falls strictly within our jurisdiction. But of course there are other complications of crime and other things, and certainly together with the gambling board, we are very eager and willing to do more research and to see how it could be regulated. We move on to recommendations where we start to agree partially. First, we agree with totally. And the third recommendation deals with the appointment of the distributing agency. Now, I think the recommendation in the report is that the governance and the appointment of the distributing agency needs to be seriously reviewed, because they are appointed by the minister, but they spend money of the NLDGF, of which the board are the trustees. So in fact, they're spending someone else's money. They are not audited. They are not accountable to your committee. So in effect, Chairperson, what happens is that annually, in our annual report, the annual report of the NLB, there are always items of irregular expenditure. And these are cases that are grants made by distributing agencies. That comes as irregular expenditure in our annual report. So the way that the distributing agencies are appointed needs to be reviewed. The recommendation has been made in the report that the NLDGF should perhaps become separate funding entities, and that the distributing agencies should become full-time employees of that funding agency is one option. But it's not an option that we believe is the best option or the optimum option, and probably one that was not thought out properly, but we will come to that in a later slide. So, Jefferson, we agree that in the event that the committee sees fit that it has to be separated, we then believe that these agencies should become Schedule 3 as public entities so that they fall under the PFMA, proper auditing and all of that, which does not happen. The fourth recommendation, Chairperson, on problem gambling, this was also discussed by the gambling board. The lottery has its own play responsible program, and we agree that that is a preventive program. We do not have remedial programs or counseling in that program. And we agree that perhaps we should contribute to that. But having said that, Chairperson, it is our contention, and I think it is accepted internationally, that the lottery is not the same as casino gambling. The form of gambling, the pathology of chase, all of that is absent in lottery gambling, which means that it's very difficult for the lottery to create a problem gambler. The lottery conducts its own research, and the research that the UNISA Bureau for Market Research did for us last year shows that the incidences of problem gambling in the lottery are insignificant. But we do believe that problem gambling is an issue, and we are quite willing and also able in terms of resources to become more involved. But having said that, Chairperson, the NLDGF as a funder of NGOs has been funding a lot of applications for rehabilitation. I mean, we are funding the National Council on Problem Gambling. We're funding NICRO, which is not only a crime rehabilitation, but also starting to diversify into other forms of rehabilitation. So we are funding quite a lot of programs in that, but as we said earlier, we're quite happy to be part of a national. We were part of the National Council, which was set up as the Parapolitical Council on the Regulation of Problem Gambling. And as far as we know, we still sit on that council, but that council has been largely superseded by the National Gambling, the National Responsible Gambling Program, which is not something that was set up by the minister. So we still have some issues about those empty seats on that council. The other issue that we have with the NRGB chairperson is that we believe that although they're doing good work, it is a monopoly. And so the issue about awarding research, awarding counseling, and all of that in a fair and competitive manner is not there. We think that needs to be opened up a little more as well. Chairperson, the recommendation about separating the NRB from the NRDG. We have agreed in the previous slide that the governance structure is untenable. We think that needs to be remedied immediately. We also agree that the distributing agency should be accountable. But we challenge the basis on which those recommendations were made, because when you read the report says quite clearly that it is because of capacity problems at the NLB that the separation should take place. Our contention, Jefferson, is that the capacity issues and the issues around the funding is not where it is located, but rather with the funding model that governs it. And this funding model is embedded and entrenched in the Act, and that's where the focus should be. We believe that the effect of distribution could be dramatically and significantly improved if the funding model was changed from the way that it is currently structured to something which is more in the control of a funding policy. We think that if one separates the NODTF from the NOB without fixing the fundamental issue, which is the funding model, and all we're doing is we're shifting the capacity problem from one entity to another. And if you look at this capacity issue, Chairperson, this slide is not meant to show tardiness or anything like this. This is just the fact of the way things are structured. So the applications come into the NLB, and with the current capacity that we have, it's quite easy for us to do 1,000 applications a month. So, for example, if we get 4,000 applications in a call for charities applications, within 4 months we can have those ready to be adjudicated. The adjudication agencies are part of them, as you know, and they do between 100 and 200 a month. Now, that's where the little red bottleneck comes. And this is not because they are slow, this is just because of the nature of the way they are appointed. So if they do 200 a month, Chairperson, it will take them 2 years to do the 4,000 that we have already processed. Now, this is not a function of the fact that they are part-time or full-time, Chairperson. It is a function of what is meant by adjudication. And I think that there's a misinterpretation about what is meant by adjudication. And our view is that adjudication is not looking at the total application, looking at every page and deciding whether or not it meets the mandatory and the fundamental requirements, and then moving on to see whether it has merit or not. So we believe that even with a PAFM structure, and if you look at funders internationally, adjudications are not done on a full-time basis. The assessment of applications are done on a full-time basis. And I believe that if we refine the definition of adjudication to mean the actual decision about who gets money is separated from the assessment of an application, where the merit of it is given some sort of scientific measure so that it is very defensible about whether someone should get money or not, if that is separated and that is done by the office, whether that office is the NLB or some other office, if that function is done by the office, then obviously the distributing agencies will have less to do, and they could ramp up the rate of adjudication to match that of the rate that at which it comes in, and we will see a dramatic increase in the turnaround time. So, Chairperson, when people in the public write to the minister to say we've been waiting 2 or 3 years for our application to be adjudicated, it's not a surprise, because if it's the last one that was delivered and there are 4,000 applications, it is going, by nature of the process, going to wait for 2 years. share some comments in respect of the funding model, Chairperson. The funding model at the moment, in the way that it is entrenched in the Act, is that distributing agencies will make calls for applications and people will apply. Now, the consequences of this funding model is that if there is a selection or a part of the community, for example, that is identified where intervention is clearly needed, if we do not get an application from that area will largely be ignored. And in the same vein, we will get applications from areas which are over-resourced. And because those applications are professionally written and they look very good, the chances are they will get some of them. So the whole application-based system actually distorts the funding and almost ironically removes it from the areas where it is needed to areas where sometimes it is not actually needed. The model is inflexible because if there is a disaster, for example, we cannot just support going there, make an intervention because we have to go there, ask them to make an application. And then if they don't have 2 years financial audited statements, we can't help. So that's an issue also. There's a high degree of inflexibility. And because of the application based thing, we cannot target. You know, if we want to target a woman's cooperative in Lakovo that are making bricks or roof tiles, because they don't have financial state, we can't do it. So, and of course, there's high risk because of the number of applications we receive. There's a lot of scams that are disguised as good applications, and that's a problem of the force. The funding model is reactive, so instead of making proactive interventions where they are required, which are aligned with national priorities, all of that, you know, we are passive and we wait for applications to come in, and then we dish the money. And of course, it is inapplicable because emerging organizations do not have the funding requirements, they do not have financial status. All of that makes it very the last recommendation, Chairperson, that was made was the recommendation to combine the National Gambling Board with the National Lottery Board into a single regulator. And I think we share the sentiments of the Gambling Board. We think that if you look at the nature and the history from the Howard Commission and the Viren Commission, that did intensive research on the gambling industry at the time and proposed that that gambling, you know, casinos, horse racing should be a shared competence in the lottery because of its good force anymore. You know, 34% of every rand that is spent on lottery tickets goes to good causes. This is not the case for the other forms of gambling. And it was preferred at the time to be separate, and it was accepted at the time to be separate, and the constitution and the legislation that was drafted continued to entrench that position. We believe that position has not changed, Chairperson. We still believe that that casinos, racing and gambling should remain as it is. I think the gambling board's view that there are some issues and I don't think we at this point want to be part of those turf issues that they have at the moment. We believe that some of those issues have been sorted out, and that would be the time to consider a new commission. We also believe that the nature of the gambling in the two areas are completely different, which means that the knowledge that we've built up over the last 12 years, us and the gambling board, has been so specialized that to amalgamate them, and as we say in the slide, it would obfuscate the whole the amount of work and investment that we have done, both in human and other resources. So to close up, Chairperson, what we want to say is that a lot of what we present as our view is actually supported by all of our stakeholders. And to prove this, we had a large scale of consultation with almost 18,000 beneficiary organizations in the provinces. We had organizations attending our national Indaba where we discussed the funding model, where we discussed the way that money should flow. And there was a lot of consensus between what the board's belief is and what the beneficiaries would like in terms of, you know, the flexible funding model instead of just the application-based model, the fact that there should be a national funding policy that we don't have at the moment, the fact that we should simplify for smaller grants the application process. You know, that if you just started something in an emerging organization doing fantastic work, should not need to give us a pile of documents. There was consensus that we need to eliminate fraud and all of that, and a lot of this we already work in. And then, of course, there was the FPA research, and we have research in inverted commas there because we do not believe that it was statistically defensible. But anyway, the FPA research sort of, and I think they've made a presentation to this committee, concur with most of the suggestions that we are making in respect to the recommendations. Jefferson, that's the other board presentation.
So thank you very much. Certainly with a time frame, very succinct. Thank you. We will now just ask members to have a number of, I'm sure, comments and queries. I'm just going to see by show of hands here. Honourable Smuller, Honourable Harris, Honourable Kofsky, those are the Honourable Khadebe.
Yes, go ahead. I'm apologizing. Allow me to be a bit controversial today for a change. I would like to refer to, I would like to start with the judgment at a court case, but I would start from there and go further. I would like to get the viewpoints of the board on a few aspects that came about that. I would like to say, does the National Lottery Board view if grants that are given are actually gratitudes towards organizations? Is that your thinking towards applicants? Secondly, the judgment of Judge Campbell also said that the DAs, the distributing agencies, is actually accountable to the National Lottery Board. And do you actually hold those distributing agencies and its members actually accountable for the decisions they make and the output that they, what you get eventually? And since you can maybe elaborate, before the judgment you've done some things differently, and after the judgment you maybe utilized advice and did things differently. It also referred to that your funding module or your decision making should not be inflexible. Your viewpoint on that it would. Are you seeing that you, the National Lottery Board, wants to take over some of the funding practices that is being offered by TTI within the scope of small, medium enterprises, which we all know very well that GULA is one of the funding models to assist the small, medium enterprises? And are you seeing yourself on kickstarting SMMEs, or are you seeing yourself of assisting NGOs that are more of a social benefit in order to assist in those social needs? Okay. I think the criteria, the Norton Standard, have you got actually Norton Standards in place that determines the criteria and that deals with conflict of interest of DA members that sit on these boards, and including yourselves as a board member, as board members that do these applications, clear guidelines and determines clear point system that avoids a application-based applicant, but that will focus more on relevant issues on a merit base and on the outcome of what that NGO should want to do. finally, just quickly, your roadshow. Okay, sorry. Maybe I'll get a second round. Your roadshows. I would like just to understand, is it your national endowment, is it a roadshow where you pass on information on what you want to do, or is there actually a robust communications between yourself and operators that actually do take place, where you actually take these inputs and do change those modules or those issues that you are looking at, and you take that into effect?
Thanks, Chair. The slide, there's no slide on this, but there's a slide called Capacity Issue, where the DAs process 100 applications. Now, I understand those DAs meet for 2 days in a month. And so, mathematically, they would need 20 days to process. If they process 100 in 2 days, they need 20 days to process 1,000. And if you say they're getting 4,000 applications from charities, they should be able to do that working full time for a month. Now, we need to know where in the regulations it's established that they're part time. And I think one of the things, Chair, that this committee can do is hand those regulations immediately to Ms. Nsuli to amend them. We have a situation where there's a blockage, as is demonstrated on the slide, and it's regulation. It's in regulations. We can amend them quickly. Let's change the structure of the DA now. Even if we have to pay them as full-time employees and work them for 4 months of a year, however the numbers work out, it will solve a problem that is clearly causing many of the issues that the lotteries distribution board is facing. Secondly, Chair, I have to ask a question that I think South Africa would want me to ask, and that is, how can it be justified that COSATU and the National Youth Development Agency can be allocated 41 million rand when they are needy organizations that are regularly told they are insufficient funds? Thirdly, Chair, Honorable Smiller quoted the judgment from September this year in a case overseen by Judge Kacharia. And I just want to read from his conclusion there, because it provides some context to the members on what Honorable Smiller was talking about. The judge said, I mentioned at the outset that the funds of the board are aimed at supporting socially worthy projects, and that for the years under review, the board failed to disburse 6 billion rand. The rigid and inconsistent application of the guidelines at least partly explained why this has happened. Equally distressing is that the board does not appear to understand its mandate properly. The chairperson of the board and the opponent to his answering affidavit seems to hold the view that grants given by the board are gratuities which are allocated at the board's discretion. He is wrong. Chair, I think that judge's statement provides the context for this presentation that we're hearing today, and the members need to realize that this is probably the latest statement by a member of the judiciary on the situation at the time. The implication of some of the findings is that in 2009, he referred to 6 billion rand that was unspent and claimed that was 42% of the allocated funds, but only 15% of the total amount available for distribution was spent. Now, Chair, I've been to the annual report for this year, and I can't find the updated numbers on that situation. I'd like to know what is the total amount in the fund, what is the proportion of money that's allocated before expenditure, and what percentage of that did you manage to distribute? I can find, Chair, on page 15, in the financial statements on page 63, there's accumulated funds on the balance sheet of 2 billion rand. Now, that's after the provisions for allocation by the DA. Is that 2 billion rand money that the board is sitting on that isn't going to be distributed by the DA? So I need some clarity on that. Chair, can we get a second round later? Well, I do have several more questions, and I think given the prominence in the media of this body, we should be given another round.
Well, you think you're moving early, and we still have another item.
Okay. The judgment refers to a special board committee that heard an appeal. Is this a statutory body? What is the appeal process? I'm not sure it's good corporate governance for the body that grants the money to fund the airport as well. Can you clarify that situation? And then my last question, Chair. The situation in this weekend's media where the daughter of the chairperson was appointed to an event management company 1 month after they were granted a huge amount of 41 million rand, which I understand is probably one of the biggest grants given under that section. Was that conflict of interest, potential conflict of interest rather, was that declared? And what oversight mechanisms are there at the NLB to mitigate against potential conflicts of interest like that? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Khadebe.
Honourable Kotsi. Thank you, Chair. Chair, the issue, again, the issue of the delays in distributing agencies, I think that problem is a problem that we should jointly with NLB look into, because generally when complaints are made and in the media, it is said it is a national authority board. It does not talk about distribution agencies. Therefore, it is a problem that should be attended immediately, and perhaps as Honourable Member Harris was saying, that as the committee and the department, we should be prepared as well to pay extra so that there are no delays in those funds being distributed to the people concerned. The other is that I have a concern about the issue that is reported about the fact that I do not think that NLB should go out of its mandate for now in terms of looking at other matters, you know, other new issues or changing regulations around how they distribute funds, because I think you'll be adding more problems to what you already have. Because for now, I think there could be other agencies that could, I mean, or other organizations that could fund. Like, I mean, I hear you say there's a certain criteria that before you find that they should fall onto. I think for now that we're still looking into all these, it would be better to stick to that and refer those, because I think there are a number of other agencies that actually fund different projects that maybe you could refer to, like NEF and others in the Department of Trade and Industry, rather than adding on more problems, rather deal with what is there and correct perhaps whatever needs to be at what you're funding already. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable
Mabasa. Thanks, Chair. My question is, to what degree does the board make itself, to what degree is it availing itself to the population, such that the population becomes aware of it, and such that they know that they can access it under certain circumstances for help? Because in other words, their outreach progress. Because if they don't do that, we're very likely to find that the board unintentionally serves only those that have. And those that are very, very, very needy may suffer the blight. But where the board is approached, how speedy the capacity to respond speedily, how enormous is that?
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa. Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually interested in this research report, which was done by what was UNICEF on the issue of problem gambling, that it concluded that the issue of lottery is insignificant. If that study can be made available in its entirety to us. Because what is worrying me, Chairperson, is that when you go in the country, in the afternoons on Saturdays, where the lottery machines, you find long queue, very long queue. And then, really, I think from what I see and from what the report is saying, it's something different. If we can get the entire report so that we can put that end of preference, what we should be looking at. Number two, Chairperson, and then all the very same queues which are long,
there are a lot of people which we can see that are definitely they are low, below 18 of age. Below 18 years of age. You can look at them, you can see that they are below 18 years of age. And then according to the rules, they are not supposed to be there in those queues. And then how do they ensure that those guys don't participate in the lottery itself? And then number three, Chairperson, is the issue of maximization model. I'm having a serious problem with that one. Because right now, I think that technically the lottery is being played in with the SMS. SMS is some sort of interactive gambling. Those people take that call, lotto is a gambling. You gamble when you're doing lotto. Because you're putting somewhere there hoping that something good will come at the end of the day. But when you put it on the SMS level, and then when you are able to, if you're an FNC customer, you can play through your ATM and then all those things, then I've got a serious problem. Are they not contradicting the very law of the country that interactive gambling is illegal in South Africa? But whereas when you do it through the internet, they don't even to do that. The last one, but not the chair, is the issue of the requirement of the financial statement, clear financial statement. One of the chapters said we relaxed the law when we passed the Companies Amendment Bill that the requirement for the emerging companies, small companies, that they must not, we didn't provide for this onerous requirement of the audited financial statement. So, on this regard, really, what is it which makes them to take so long to review? Is it not in the regulation that they can rectify that quickly? So that a lot of people can be able to qualify that. Because there's a very lot of deserving charities in the rural areas which cannot access there because precisely of that provision, because they cannot access that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khadebe. Honorable McIntosh, just asked at the time, so if we can just keep this to 2 minutes, please.
I'll keep it to 1 minute, Madam Chair. I was at the working group last Monday when Honourable Smuller was not there, so we had a very good briefing. So the only question I want to ask is, why is there a certain discomfort, it seems, from the CEO side on what he calls application-based funding? And I want to join Honourable Mabaso. The question is, how do you market it, and is there any alternative to application-based funding? And the last question is, have you ever looked at one of the biggest charities in South Africa over the last 30 or 40 years? It used to be called the Anglo-American Chairman's Fund. And they just spent huge sums of money to good causes. And I'm sure they've got some good models for how to approach that. So if you could tell me if you have ever considered, they do have a lovely, I think, vendor or Shangan name now. But it used to be called the Anglo-American Chairman's Fund.
Thank you very much. Right, we're just over to yourselves now. It's 4 minutes past 12. We'd like you to conclude if it's possible. And in fact, nothing is possible. We need to conclude at 20 past, please. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. On the issue of the judgment, indeed, Honorable Musmon, the outcome of the judgment was on the procedures applied by the distributing agencies, which the first judgment indicated that those guidelines are not the law by themselves. When the DAs adjudicate, should they look at the guidelines, which may not necessarily explain what the law says or the regulations, or should they look at the project, whether this is a project in whatever the organization applied for? So it is on those bases that it is true we need to look at whether we have to align whatever we discuss as guidelines with the regulations and the Act. And that is the anomaly that we see from the Act itself, say, which the CEO touched earlier on, so that we refrain from emphasizing guidelines at the expense of, you know, the the act itself and the regulations, so that we look at the project, whether the project is feasible, there's something that we can do within that project. And on those, we agreed with you know, the judge to say, go back. The judge doesn't say, go and grant them. He says, go back and adjudicate if there is a project. If there is, the project is legitimate. Well, obviously, we have to do that. And I think we welcome the outcome. That's why it is now in the process. The accountability of the distributing agency, as the CEO indicated, they are appointed differently from the board. There is nothing in the Act that says report to the board. However, we have made progress ever since we had our provincial roadshows and Indaba, to an extent that together with the Department of Trade and Industry, we have reached, we have achieved something which we believe if the legislators can put it in the Act, it will solve a lot of problems. For example, at least the distributing agencies will work hand in hand with the board, and we have a committee which is chaired by Zoltan Tuli, which is, we call it Board Distributing Agency, so that we can minimize some of the attention, you know, the tensions that were, you know, stopping the progress of adjudication and whatever. And I think those discussions are working very well. Those are the discussions that made us about the procedure manual, which was approved or signed by the minister towards the end of August. That indicates the manner in which the distributing agency can adjudicate the application, also the board, so that if you are conflicted, another structure must go and adjudicate such an application. And it is the document that we have, which we have started using it with the current distributing agencies that have been appointed by the minister, the charities and even the arts. And that also goes to board members, so that at least we declare our interests. If we are conflicted, we must write it down, so that the application that comes in and you are conflicted, another structure within the NLB must go and adjudicate it. And we realize that we have got a solution. We have got three distributing agencies, let alone the board itself. If an application comes from the sports, and we know that there are members of the federations that are sitting in that particular committee, such an application must go to the arts distributing agency for them to apply their mind. To an extent that if we find that they can't form a quorum, the document or the procedure manual empowers us to find a neutral body to go and look at that particular application. The rest, the CEO and other members will. The impact of the roadshows. We had to, that was the roadshow and even proper consultative forums at provinces. The roadshow was to make sure that we give information to organizations, how to apply, what is needed, and that is why after our roadshows throughout the whole country, when we issued a call for application for charities, for the first time, we received 8,500 applications, which in the past it was not like that, because people didn't know. So this time, at least, they have information. It's only that, on the other hand, that organizations don't prepare themselves. Some of them come on the last minute to fill in the form, which might be, you know, be rejected. The consultative forum was about how we operate. We wanted people to criticize us. wanted people to tell us whether the model that we are using is a model that they believe is yielding the good results. And they did. Part of what we are presenting here today, Honorable Chair, is part of what those 18,000 people told us, is part of what the 1,500 delegates which came to us, they've given us information to say the model that you are using is not that much feasible to the material conditions of South Africa because it is application based. If there is any need, any emergency, there's no way that you can fund such an organization. Why don't you come up with a combination of application based and also need based type of request? Also, this consultation made us to make sure that we will propose that at least there's not only one call for application per year. There has to be numerous call for application. Some of them will have some capping so that you don't just make it, you know, general. You have to say this is the call for only 20,000 rand grants, or the one that you want, you know, organization to target some of the priorities that that have been addressed by the government.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just pick up the questions that Chairperson hasn't handled. The issue from Honourable Smalley about the kickstarting SMMEs, I don't think we are under the missing norma, almost apprehension, thank you, Honourable McIntosh, that it is our job to kickstart SMMEs. I think that's, you know, the job of the IDCs and all of that. But what we would like to do, and this is why we're saying the model is inflexible, if you go to a rural area and you find a group of women mixing concrete and making roof tiles, what you would like to do is to fund some machinery and all of that so that in 18 months they become sustainable. I mean, that's what we would like to do. As opposed to giving organizations money every year for them to increase their capacity and to expand and expand, so they want more money every year without making any discernible impact. So that is what we would like to do. We do not want to start SMMEs, but we want to create sustainability, and we want to encourage those people, especially in the rural areas, that have the entrepreneurial spirit and do not have the resources to kickstart it themselves. So essentially that's what we would like to do. The roadshows, I think Chairperson has covered that. It's actually a double-edged sword for us because, Honourable Mabasa, when we go out to the population to explain to them how to apply and all of that, as the Chairperson said, in the charity sector, we got on average 4,000 applications a year. Last year, we went out on the roadshows. We explained how do you apply, and then we got 8,500 applications. And the reason that it's a double-edged sword is that it creates a lot of expectation. On the one hand, you want to increase the accessibility. You want to make sure that the funding is accessible to everyone. But the problem is, without fixing the legislation that requires 2 years financials and all you're doing is you're creating these expectations and you're getting applications which you have to, by law, reject. So it is a problem. On the one end, you want to encourage accessibility. On the other end, you have these rigorous application requirements that automatically reject all of these. So we need, that's a fine balance. And I think once we change the funding model so that we can fund natural persons rather than juristic persons, a single person who in a house is raising eight orphans, we can't fund a person like that at the moment. So we need to have a look both at the funding model and at the education and the accessibility together. The capacity issues raised by Honorable Harris, Chairperson, as we explained, again, it's a fine balance. When you have part-time distributing agency, it means that they have one foot in the industry, so they know exactly what's going on, the current trends in funding, what is necessary, which are the areas of need. When you make them full-time, they obviously then become employees of some organization or the other, and they lose this attachment and the currency of their knowledge about those areas. So we think that is a fine balance. But I think we have explained that if we redefine the notion of what adjudication is, and we allow full-time people to do assessments and part-time people with the knowledge and expertise to make the decisions, that we can go a long way to improving the capacity without having full-time. But, I mean, a full-time option is obviously always there. The issue about COSATU and the NYDA, and I think we've explained this many, many, many times, there's always this notion that instead of giving the NYDA money, we could have given it to some hungry people. Now, we have, in the Act, different categories. There's a sports category, there's an arts category, there's a charities category. The charities category gets R1.5 billion to distribute it to deserving charities. We cannot take money that's allocated for miscellaneous or for arts to feed hungry people, because those applications are there purely for things like things of international importance, like the youth conference. And certainly the applications met the requirements. You cannot refuse an application because it comes from COSATU. If the requirements are met, the financial statements, all of that are there, and the intention of the application has merit, then obviously it will be more difficult to refuse it than to grant it. And it's the same with COSATU. And we funded other organizations, FEDUSA, other trade unions for conferences and for getting people to the conferences and all of that. So, you know, we don't believe that, and there are probably other applications also, if you look at our annual report, that fall into the same category, but because these have got certain connections and alliances, you know, we keep having, we are always requested to explain ourselves over and over about these two particular ones. The issue of the judgment chairperson, now this again is an issue for us. I mean, when you have a judge of a Supreme Court saying, yes, we have 6 billion lying around, when the minister in his speech at our Indaba says there is no 6 billion. I mean, that should worry you. And then when you have a Supreme Court judge telling you that the NLB is not distributing money, the NLB does not distribute money. It's the distributing agencies. And this thing about largesse, that chairperson, it's not the NLB's money. We understand that it sits in a fund, and we have no control over that money. It is distributed by the distributing agency. So, in fact, you should have said it is the largesse of the distributing agency. So that we also contest that particular statement. We do not have 6 billion rand. If you look at our financial audited financial statements from the year dot, in 2000, when the lottery started up to the 31st of March this year, we have received something like 14 billion from the National Lottery, which is 12 billion rand in revenue and about 2 or 3 billion rand in interest, so maybe around 15 billion in total. We have distributed 11 billion in hard cash to beneficiaries, which leaves you at 4 billion, of which about 2.5 or 3 billion have already been allocated, Chairperson. So if you apply for a large grant, and that grant is made in 3 tranches over 3 years, and we paid you your first tranche. The second 2 tranches are with us, but it's not our money. Provided that you meet the requirements and satisfy the grant agreement, it is an obligation on us to give you those 2. So 3 billion of that is sitting there. It's not our money. It is money that belongs to beneficiaries. And so for this financial year, we had 1.5 billion rand to distribute, and that's what we're currently distributing. And I think it's not enough. In fact, we've already have a lot more applications than we have money. So I think we need to dispel that notion that we're sitting on piles of money and we do not know what to do with it and we're too slow to give it out. Actually, that is not true. The appeal process, the Act is very silent. In fact, there is no appeal process in the Act. And that also needs to be corrected. We, at the moment, the Act says the only people that can adjudicate are the distributing agencies. So the board itself cannot also act as an appeal body, because an appeal body essentially looks at a decision and has the power to overturn the decision and make a grant if it was refused. But the board can't make a grant. No one else can make a grant, which effectively means that the appeal bodies are the distributing agencies themselves. And they said, if we said no before, we're going to say no again. I mean, that's the long and the short of it. The conflict of interest issue, Chairperson, I mean, we're very, very concerned about the whole issue of conflict of interest. And when it comes to the DAs, as the Chairperson has alluded, we have now entrenched it in a procedure document which was agreed to and signed up by the Minister. So the distributing agencies are now bound to declare conflict, and if the conflict is the degree of the connection is so close that the board believes it should be adjudicated by someone else, and that's how it will be done. When it comes to the conflict of interest within the board, we obviously have our own ethics policy, we have our own code of conduct policy, and the example of the chairperson's daughter, myself, chairperson, as the custodian of the whole of all the policies at the NLB, including the ethics policy and the code of conduct policy, we have over 15,000 beneficiaries. I cannot say that any of the employees of the NLB or members of the board or spouses cannot work at any of the beneficiaries. I think that is restrictive. The whole idea of the conflict of interest that it is transparent. So it is not a secret that the professor's daughter works at the beneficiary. There may be other board members' daughters or daughters of people that work at the board who work for beneficiaries. It's not a secret because it has been declared in the proper form and it sits in our declaration register, which is audited every year by the AG. The issue is of transparency. So if we cannot prevent people from working freely as the Constitution allows them to, all we need is for the transparency to be clear, and that in this case was done. And we don't think it would have been an issue if that organization got 10,000 rand. I think it's because it's 41 million rand. And the chairperson obviously was not involved in the adjudication of that application, nor did he have any influence in it. So we have absolutely no problem that there was any conflict of interest or that there was any misrepresentation in that particular instance.
Just to remind you of all your questions,
The UNISA, the issue from Honourable Khareve, it will be a pleasure for us to provide you with the full report. And it was a comprehensive study with a very large sample size in the deep rural areas as well as in metropolitan areas, and certainly we will share that with you. But I just need to point out that the issue of problem gambling is, I mean, it's a pathological issue where people and their families, lives, and everybody around them are affected by their behavior. And I think the cues that you see are probably because there's a rollover in the Powerball and all of that. There is no necessary correlation between the cue and whether people are problem gamblers or not. I think the issue, the pathology of problem gambling is very defined, very succinct, and I don't think we want to get into that. The maximization model, Chairperson.
The age issue?
Yes, I'm coming to that. Chairperson, the underage issue, obviously underage gambling is illegal. The operator, Gidani, gives us a unconditional undertaking that every person that is connected with the National Lottery and its products are fit and proper and over 18. They have separate contracts with their retailers, people that actually sell the tickets. And we police some of them, but there are 8,500 retailers around the country. And sometimes, you know, you may find that there's a person in the queue and for expediency they will serve that person and the person may be under 18. There's an obligation on that retailer not to do that. And if he's found to do that, then obviously he loses his license and contract and he's broken the law, so there may be some consequences of that. But certainly we have an underage, we have the responsible gaming program and the underage media program. So there's posters in every window and all of that that says you cannot play when you're under 18. Chairperson, playing the lottery through SMS is not interactive gambling. The interactive gambling is where one is interacting with a game on a machine in some site and betting and losing and betting some more and all of that. The SMS and internet and the ATM for us are just channels of payment. The lottery by nature is not interactive. I mean, you pick a set of numbers and then it's over. Now there's no, and you have to wait a few days for the draw and then decide whether you want to chase your losses. I mean, it's just not, it is not interactive and certainly not overtly addictive. And we've had, it's online gambling, I think, Chairperson, this is where the issue is. The lottery is by nature online and has been online since it started. It is not interactive. Okay. Just want to see what we've missed out. Joanne Dowsett's Chairperson, I'm just going through my notes. Oh, yes, the Anglo-American Chairman Fund. That is actually probably a... distorted analogy, Chairperson, because the Anglo-Americans Chairperson Fund, if they decide tomorrow they want to fund wind power, they can do that. They just get the vote together and they change it. The NLDTF, because it is creature of statute and because there are regulations, we cannot tomorrow change what we're funding. So these private funds, they obviously always align to the needs of the day, and they can do that overnight. And they also can dispense with financial statements. They can do, you know, anything they want. I mean, they can give themselves money if they want. We have all of these restrictions, and we're hoping that, Chairperson, through your work, a lot of these constraints will be lifted. Not that we want to distribute money in an irresponsible way, but we want to make it easy for people to have access to the money, and we want the money to make more impact. I think we've...
Right. Now, what we're going to do, members, is this. I do see that a couple of members have got would like to explore one or two other issues. I know that. But we've heard what has been said. We've got the, PowerPoint. What I think we must allow the members, you can see how the responses came back from the previous slot, you know, well dotted, is to raise the questions and to indicate to the National Lotteries Board now that we want these responses. Today is Wednesday. We want them Friday so that we've got them for, you know, Manco on Tuesday and so on. So I think, members, we will raise the issues. I'm looking just in terms, I just need to check, of course, if Ms. Kemmer is here. Mm-hmm. She is. No, that's fine. And that what we'll do is we will raise these issues. Some of them are follow-up. I anticipated two or three of them. And let us ask you at this point in time to leave. A couple of the responses you gave almost lead into further questions. That's mm-hmm. the issue that we're facing here. And, we may even need, I don't know how much time you spent in the working group, quite frankly, and the subcommittee, in terms of an engagement there, and that may need to come again. And we are calling people back if we run short, if the written responses are not adequate. Because regrettably, you know, the whole maximization model has come up several times, and it would be pertinent for us to, the DAs have always been problematic. The committee said this in 2009. We were not happy with that. They were really a challenge, and I know there are many issues. So it may even be pertinent for you have to return at some point. So having said that, though, I think this is something for us to go on with anyway, and we really would like to thank you for being here with us, for your patience in waiting before you engage with us on the matter. Thank you very much. So we will come back to you. So I am releasing you as such. Thank you very much. To members of the committee, I want in the next 2 minutes to move on to the next item on the program. So it's a matter of looking at the hands that would like to raise questions in this regard, if we can. And I just see by show of hands, I'm not suggesting we're going to ask them now, but that 1, 2, 3, there are three questions. Both of you took between yourselves 10 minutes. I'll give you 1 minute each.
All right, it's a point of order, Chair. Can I? There, I have several more. Can I submit them in writing? Might be simpler. Right.
You can't do it in 1 minute. Then we would like those questions in writing, so that they can. You saw how, in fact, people have become a lot more responsive in responding. And let's get that. And if you can, Mr. Hermans, share that with all of us so that they may even raise other questions. I have a few questions myself. So let's share the questions and then send them on. All right. Well, if you can see time is against us, I really think the National Lotteries Board should have had it tomorrow morning at the earliest, sort of 6 o'clock when they wake up in the morning. A close of business, yeah. Right. As I know, the lotteries people are, like ourselves, hard workers. But on a more serious note, we are dealing with it on Tuesday in the bank. Anything that arrives after 9:30 on Monday, 10 o'clock, will not be dealt with. I need you to know that. So if the committee secretary tells you already on Friday he doesn't have them, it'll be your obligation to ring him at 9 o'clock to ask, has he received the response? So you may, in fact, be invited back. So please don't see this as a capping, because I think you want to say a lot more yourselves. Thank you. Right. I wish we had more time, but the COP is now our national priority, and we are all working towards that. All right. But I do thank you. I think, Professor, you've got, a good team there in front of you. Professor Nehutanda, I just saw there's sort of 2 or 3 professors here, so you may have wondered which professor I was talking to. But thank you very much. And probably another 6 lying around. But thank you. We're going to go into the very next item immediately, as it is, but you're welcome to stay. It is still a gambling matter. So we've got Miss Kemmer. She needs to take a seat right up front here. It's one person. So, you know, it's hardly a the whole panel. See, Miss Kemmer, you're being given a load of space for your lieutenants who are not here. Anyway. Right. All right. Just before Ms. Kemmer starts, there's this one item. How far are we on this? Status checking. Mm-hmm. Now, the equipment. Well, in that case, can we ring up the senior manager to see that it's working by this afternoon? Because otherwise, members will be complaining to me that they don't have the responses. Yeah. Ms. Kemmer, yes, your challenge that you raised came up as a result of our engagement already in the horse racing industry, or rather series of clubs. Must be an industry that has the greatest number of clubs. But there we are, all with clubs. They're just rivaling the churches in the country. But thank you very much. And the issue you raised was one that the committee as a whole was a little concerned with, and some more so than others. So we'd like to welcome you here at short notice. I know you got from us. And perhaps just for the purpose of this meeting, we would just say one or two of us may know who you are, Ms. Kemmer, and where you hailing from. Not exactly where you were born, but,
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Pindi Kemmer is my name and surname. I am the founder of Africa Race Group, a company that is involved in horse racing. I started in this industry 5 years ago as a breeder, and that was in Ado. We have since moved forward because we realized that it's not going to help to continue making the product and then there is no market, simply because the biggest population in our country goes to the races, but unfortunately it is not part of the industry. But also we began to realize that there's quite a lot that needs to happen within the industry.
You were just in your flow, you go ahead.
Thank you very much.
One or two members have an exact idea, but you know, with their commitments, not every member is present at all of these meetings. It's not because they don't want to be here. We have avid race goers among members. So please go ahead.
That's very nice. It's quite pleasing. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to take this opportunity and thank the committee for the invitation. It's really appreciated because we are aware that at this stage we are not license holders, and therefore we are not in a position to engage on gambling matters. But we thought it is necessary that we shed more light with regards to an area the Gambling Act is regulating, and this area relates to horse racing. And this invitation came in the middle of a matter that is before the Competition Commission, but I will not delve into that. Because it is a matter that is handled in a different forum. I would like to focus more on the impact, the lack of regulation of horse racing has within the horse racing as an industry. And I'm saying the lack of regulation precisely because we are a very complex industry, because the industry in itself cuts across three ministries, and that is first where horses are produced, and that is the breeding, and that relates to agriculture. Then the second area is the sport, and the sport, it is where the jockeys and their horses run. The third area being the area that relates to the Department of Trade and Industry, and that is the betting. So, Madam Chair, bear with me if I dump all my problems, because this is the only committee that has a statutory body that relates to the horse racing industry. I have prepared a huge file, which I will make available to your office. The horse racing industry, has three bodies that, are meant to be regulating the industry. The first body is the National Horse Racing Industry. National Horse Racing Authority. Which, I've seen the CEO of the NHA, Mr. Rob de Kock, right at the back. And the second body is the TBA, and that is the Thoroughbred Breeders Association. Third body being Racing South Africa. Now, the National Horse Racing Authority, is the body that regulates all aspects of the race course. You may have received presentation, and you know quite a lot about that, so I'm not going to focus on that, but I would like to talk about some of the areas that, as new players in the industry, we believe do not necessarily serve the industry well. It is the fact that the National Horse Racing Authority is meant to be regulating the race operators. And when you have the two race operators... when you have a body that is regulating the entire industry, and it has the two racing operators sitting on the board, you start understanding that there is no independence. You know, and the reason I am saying this is that, you know, the National Horse Racing Authority is the body that polices the industry. Within the body in itself, we have the only two race operators sitting on the board. Now, the two race operators are actually potentially our competitors. Now, you want to enter the space, and the two companies that you're going to be competing with make an important part of the body, that is to grant you a license to actually operate a race course. Further to that, you know, the National Horse Racing Authority is actually meant to be a body that reflects the democratic principles of South Africa in as far as it operates. I will just take one issue because I don't want to bore you with just one regulatory body. The body in itself is able to reject an application without giving reasons. And this is a body that actually has your competitors sitting, and you are meant to put forward your proposal, and they do due diligence on you. And part of that structure is actually your competitor. So before you even enter, they know so much of what you intend doing. Now I'm questioning independence. The second body is the Thoroughbred Breeders Association, which is actually managed and run by Mr. Jan Modie, who happens to be a very good friend. The Thoroughbred Breeders Association is the body that deals with the aspects that relate to the breeding of horses. And it's a body that has the stud farms as members. Now, you know, I would not like to bore you with what is happening with regards to that. Then the racing SA is a body that is meant to sell horses, that is to represent our South African products outside and deal with issues that relate to the trading of horses. One, you know, to move forward, you know, the industry in itself, I just want to give a little bit of a background about the industry. You know, from what I understand as a new player, the industry went through a process of corporatization. I'm not too sure what that means, but I will just try and share the little I have come to understand. And this is based on the market research we conducted because of our interest to become a big player in the space. We realized that the racing in South Africa is split between two companies. And the first company being Pumalela Gaming and Leisure Limited, which is listed. The second company is Gold Circle Pty Ltd. Pumalela has racing rights in Gauteng, the Eastern Cape, and the Northern Cape. And Gold Circle has racing rights in KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. Now, what has happened is, from what I understand, and this is one of the methods that I believe, government and parliament has got to deal with. It is the actual process of corporatizing the sport, because horse racing is sport, as well as the assets that belong to the horse racing fraternity. Because from what we understand, and the reason we happen to have more information in this regard, it is because we were offered a race course in Port Elizabeth. And when the offer was made, we needed to do a deed search to get an understanding of the ownership of the property. The property at the moment is, you know, owned by Pumalela. Port Elizabeth has two race courses. And the race course we were offered is actually Arlington. And we, thank you. The race course we have been offered is Arlington race course. Now, Port Elizabeth, small city, has two race courses. We get offered one race course, and that was last year in September. Started a process of negotiations. We then reached a point where we thought we had a deal, until we had people from the industry contacting us saying, are you sure what you're buying is actually a property that you own? That's when we started digging a little bit more. What the process of corporatization has done, it has allowed a situation where people took over the race courses and put them into their businesses. And now, if you want to buy, or you want to actually race in that particular race course, you cannot, because it is actually privately owned. Now, one little example I would like to give, because I've...
We've got a lot of detail in the stuff in writing.
Okay.
I think if you can, you've already shared with us some of the three critical points of the access being denied, etc. Is if you just complete that point about, you see the access, the track, which is not, if you want to buy the land, you can't own the track.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But the matter that is of importance, it is, you know, the fact that the industry, you know, was corporatized, and the process of corporatization, because the rest of South Africa was never part of that process. And that means even the assets that belong to the Racing Federation of South Africa, to the stakeholders in South Africans, have been taken over by companies. But, all right, and I think, how many minutes do I have?
Well,
only one.
I want to engage you.
Oh.
I know members, you know, we're not going to sort of ask you to leave as soon as you speak. We want to, through our engagement, to clarify certain things as well. I must apologize. We haven't been able, you heard me say this right at the beginning, to photostat any of the information we've received. And that is part of the huge challenge we're facing here. Because I've got this information and others don't have it. But we have heard about the horse racing industry per se. But I think you're coming to your key point, in fact, and I think you need to share that with us. There's the corporatization, and there were, you know, two others.
It's the lack of regulation, because the regulators are not necessarily reporting to a specific ministry. Horse racing industry is not accountable whatsoever. And the National Horse Racing Authority, which is a body that is meant to regulate the industry, is not a statutory body. And it doesn't reflect the new democratic principles of South Africa.
I think you know, members, when you do receive some of this, it's going to help. But is this a very serious case here? It actually, the first point made, and when I say case, I'm going to hasten to add, and I see you leaving now before 1 o'clock. I was hoping you would just be here while I read this out, which is the, why are we dealing with this as a committee? When in fact we ourselves clarified it and heard it, that it was going to go to the competitions authority commission. We did clarify this to see could we deal with this, you know, and we sought legal advice and procedural advice right here, because one of our committees who embarked on something with a similar situation had to be, you know, stopped in midstream. And what we received indicated the committee, after inquiring about this at the hearings, given her complaint which had been lodged with the Competition Commission against Pumalela Gaming and Leisure Limited and Gold Circle Racing Private Limited. In response to our inquiry, the Competition Commission, on whether the committee, you know, if they were dealing with it, whether they thought we could even move ahead, they didn't have a challenge at all in that regard, possibly because they weren't directly then investigating the matter, and that it would certainly encourage the committee to go ahead with its aspect or process with the transformation challenges facing the industry. And there was an email dated the 11th of October. November. I then asked Mr. Hermans, went ahead and contacted the parliamentary advocate Charmaine van der Merwe in this regard, and she concurred that there is no legal impediment, and she's the parliamentary person who would advise, of course, the Speaker, among others, for the committee to engage on this process. So it was on that basis that we went ahead. So I just want the committee to feel secure, safe, and confident that we are allowed to proceed. So, Mr. Honourable Harris, you already put in an apology. Thank you for waiting. Right. I'm just going to check with members, first, Ms. Kemmer, if they would like perhaps to hear a little bit more from yourself before engaging. Just a hand would suit me, and sometimes even a look. Honourable Khadeve. We just had to read that out. I'm sorry, Ms. Kemmer, because I could see concerns being raised. I don't want to mess up. No, you're fine.
All right, thank you. You know, the fact that the horse racing industry does not have a statutory body leads to victimization. It leads to serious problems within the industry, and it is stifling growth. I can actually mention someone, you know, because I know this is not a personal thing, but I feel strongly about this because so many people within the industry talk about it. Charles Pretorius, who is actually a racing journalist, who has, I believe personally, he's been victimized by the industry because he has questioned so much of what I am talking about. And in the spirit of dealing with all of these challenges, it is important that this industry, you know, be regulated, because when people challenge and people question, they get victimized. I would really like Parliament to, because he has serviced the racing fraternity for years. And for someone of that caliber who is young, who has a bright future in South Africa, and who believes in horse racing, to have been ostracized in that manner, it is totally, you know, unacceptable, because we need more people and young people within horse racing.
Thank you.
I also think I do not necessarily want to stress the importance of, you know, black economic empowerment, you know, because the National Gambling Board, you know, appears to be doing something, you know, in that regard. But in this day and age in South Africa, you have one or two people involved, black people involved in horse racing, it says something. We've seen what has happened, you know, in other sports, rugby, cricket. Those sports reflect, you know, what is positive about our country. That is not the case when you get inside horse racing. I'm quite happy to take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kemmer, for sharing that. We have Honourable Smaller at this point. Do we see another hand? Honourable Kotsi, Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, I hope that Pajetta will just bear with me, because I'm trying to actually find where she actually wants to go and conclude on a few things. Let me start with your last point, the black empowerment side of the horse racing industry. And we had numerous people that came and do presentations from the whole sector. It would seem that the breeder side is not so much the concern, but it's the actual racing of the sport which is the business side of it, making the profit, making a business, the money that you put in, the money that you actually get out of that. Does that specific side of the business, does that hamper, do you see that hampering BEE transformation going forward? I note that the statutory body has been asked to be formed by various members. If the statutory body is formed, would it solve your issues around corporate involvement? Your problem concerning the race track where you want to try in Arlington, because I want to understand that a little bit better, because I understand sometimes I own a building and I lease it to a business. Or, you know, I might have a franchise within my business and I sell that and I can lease. I can own the track, but the property is not mine, but I can still lease it. I mean, you get other forms of business that does that. Is that venue of leasing, of going into a leasing, although you don't own it, but you're going into a lease agreement to make use of the capital investment that there is or safeguard that, is that door closed to you as well, in order for you to do that? And for interesting sake, you mentioned that you are a breeder, or you were a breeder. Just would like to know, are you still a breeder, and does your breeding cycle or your people or your breeders, do you still compete presently with those horses on the circuit? I just would like to see if you do participate within what it is. Look, there were a few things that were said that are factual based, which I probably don't agree with you totally. And that is the just do note that the jockey clubs, it used to be jockey clubs, then it was the government that has asked, or that's how we got it, especially Gauteng, that actually asked for that they insisted in going the corporate way in order to get a more of a formalized body after so many years to get that. I mean, those are the information that came to us. I can't dispute it, I can't go against it, but there were some conflict issues that are coming up. But thank you, Chair, it was enlightening.
Thank you very much, Honourable Smaller. Honourable Kotsi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I also want to welcome the report and perhaps start by saying it would have really been ideal if we had Ms. Kemmer when the other people were there on that day, because some of the questions could have been clarified there, and perhaps because in some of the responses we made them because of the information before us. But I think that can still be sorted out, Chair, if we need this, because we are the legislators and we need to clarify
issue. I would really want to know a few things as well in terms of the regulatory body around this, because as you already say yourself that there are few black people in this, perhaps we as legislators in terms of regulating, how, I mean, would we do that so that it can reflect the demographics? If there are few other races that actually participate in this, how would that demographic situation exist? The second question is, you raised quite serious issues that of victimization and stifling, and perhaps those need to be looked at, because if we regulate and let the legislators, those issues do not have to exist at this day and age. I would also want to know if you are involved in exporting horses as well, because we were told there were problems with that. Perhaps the last question would be, how many black, authentic black business in horse breeding and racing are there, if you know?
Thank you very much, Honourable Kotsi. Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll also concur with Honourable Kotsi that we really appreciate this presentation, because as legislators, what is critical for us is to get the whole information so that we can take right decisions at the right time. So there's one question which I would like to ask, because from the previous the presentation, there was the issue that the horse racing does not make money. Why do we want to involve ourselves in something which does not make money? That's why we don't have so many historical disadvantaged people into the squad, because it does not make money. Can you clarify that aspect? Number two, on the issue, Chair, of the second issue is the issue of the corporatization part, which he raised very sharply on the issue of taking the racing federation, horse racing federation, to the private companies. Really, when did that occur? Do you have the estimated value of those assets, so that we can be able to take a decision around that aspect? And then the last one, Chair, is the issue of the issue of regulation itself, the lack of regulation. She claimed that the race housing authority would have got the competitors into that. I think that I'm speaking from the disadvantage here, because I didn't get the report which is coming from the National Horse Racing Authority. I think that question must be answered. How do these people recuse themselves when they're taking decisions whereby they affect new entrants? But that one is for the National Horse Racing Authority to answer. Because you know, even here in Parliament here, if I'm going to deal with something which is going to affect me, that we have to recuse ourselves. Do they recuse themselves there, those guys who are dealing with this thing? Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. Yes, I think that that's important. We should just add, there was one general comment made, and that general comment made was that a number of the agencies, authorities, call it what you will, did indicate that they would rather all be, you know, regulated as such, because there seemed to be a plethora of these different groups in horse racing, and each one, for different reasons, seemed to feel that they their thing is to put us all together and regulate it, because the bookies are getting this, the horse, you know, they all had a gripe, each one. So that certainly lends itself as a positive to trying to get as one a statutory body in this regard. But having said that, just to indicate to members that I think when you do get this, that's why I want you to get this dossier, that would also assist to some degree. So we want you to respond, Ms. Kemmer, but at the same time, I think the members are being put at a disadvantage, you see, beyond our control here. And there may be even more need when we bring the horse racing, whoever they are, the authority or whatever, back. There may be need, as I even said, to National Lotteries Board. Let's not say this is the last. There may well be a need for further engagement, and even within the subcommittee itself. But let us allow you in the next, in fact, 10 minutes to respond to what you can, Kemma.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd like to start with the issues that relate to lack of regulation. It is excellent that the horse racing fraternity would like to be regulated, but at the same time, it is actually difficult for the regulation to be meaningful when there is little understanding of what's happening inside, which I believe would make sense is actually an inquiry first, an inquiry that will deal with an understanding of horse racing matters from an internal point of view. Before we even talk regulation, then that process would then take us to regulation, because we would have picked up quite a lot. I mean, just take your Honorable Khadebe's question with regards to corporatization. How do I buy a race course that's valued at 50 million rands when 2008 the property was transferred to a listed company for even less than 10 million? How is that possible? I'm saying the whole process of corporatization is actually, a process. Oh, okay. It's 50 million rands for a race course. A race course the current owner inherited, and there was no exchange of cash. But the price that's sitting with the deeds office is actually 7 million, and that happened 2 years ago. Now, and a property previously that was owned by a club. Let me just make it a small example here. Gauteng, when this corporatization process started, had 4 race courses. That is Bosworth Park, which is in Kempton Park, New Market, which is in Alberton, Tasfontein, and the Vaal. The race courses we have at this point in Gauteng, actually 2 race courses that are operational, and that is the Vaal and Tasfontein. Now, if members of the South African Horse Racing Fraternity have handed over their assets and their totalizator licenses to horse racing people who are meant to look after the interests of the industry, within a year of taking over the assets, you sell it within a year, and you put money into your listed company and you declare dividends. Gauteng has lost 2 race courses. It has only 2 race courses. Where did the money for those race courses go? Because those race courses were owned by the clubs, and the clubs are actually South African citizens. Now, before we talk regulation, let's clean up the industry. Because the company that has the assets is listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. It is listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and it is selling the horse racing assets. And, why this is a bit, worrying is when you look at a country like Australia, which in so many ways is more like South Africa. They love sport, they love agriculture, and obviously they bet.
now, they have 300 race courses. The number of our race courses is going down. If we don't have the sport, there is absolutely no horse racing. And the revenue government is actually deriving from horse racing will actually go down because we will not necessarily have the sport. And this is where we're still looking at bringing in more black people and more colored people and new entrants because they have never participated. So how do you reduce the number of race courses, which is more like in as far as football is concerned, it is more like a soccer stadium. When we are meant to be making them, you know, accessible, you know, put aside the gambling aspect, which is where we derive revenue, but take a continent like the Middle East, where there is no betting. The Middle Easterns enjoy horse racing as sport. What is wrong in actually creating an excitement around the sport so people can actually access the sport? Why? Then you have privatized the industry, so it belongs to the elite club, because we as the horse racing, we are known as an elite club. Do we think we have an opportunity of bringing in people who've never been part of this?
Consulting with our committee secretary. This is, you know, I'm a bit concerned to hear, and I mean, when I see even the Honourable Smuller agreeing on one or two points, it does alarm me because it means he knows a little bit more than the industry than I think I do. And so therefore, you know, some of these facts about fewer horse racing courses. So what I want to suggest, we do want to hear more, don't get me wrong, but if I allow you to carry on now, you know what's going to happen? You're actually not going to finish, because we're going to close in 3 minutes, and then it'll be more harm than good to say, right, we've dealt with it, when we haven't. I hope I'm making myself very clear. We wouldn't have dealt with it. So I am advised that Wednesday is an opportunity, you know, that is our day, Wednesday next week, and I know the committee secretary is engaging on the matter there with, who is it, I can only see the tops of his, but, okay, he's engaging there, and then, because obviously we would also like them to come, members will have the dossiers and everything, and then there still leaves us an opportunity for a possibility of the following Wednesday, should there be a further challenge. And that also allows the study, subcommittee, the working group, should they require you to come and see them, to see you on a Tuesday late, you know, so that perhaps then it would just be an overnighter. You know, that kind of thing. So without, all I can say, if you can come on the Wednesday, I understand it, and continue to share with us a few things then, and that has been the 23rd, and meaning possibly the 22nd of November, the subcommittee may well have the chance to engage you, but I don't want to run that program. Then we can, the Horse Racing Authority can also be here, and you can have a little bit more space than trying to rush through everything, because we want, you know, clearly the horse racing has aroused a lot of passion everywhere, not just here, everywhere. And it's because most of the horse racing fraternity or the people involved in horses don't know, to me they have been unable to tell us whether it's even a sport or what, gambling, and if, you know, what is it? So if they aren't sure themselves, and they're right there, it is a challenge to all of us. There are many issues involved here, not least of all the fact that they themselves are calling for regulation. Because there isn't, I'm repeating this for emphasis, not one of them are happy. Not one of the groups involved are happy with each other. So you've got this cat fight everywhere. I mean, am I not right, members? There is, have you met one of them that says they're happy as they are? Not one of them. So that means government has to intervene. That's what it means. How is another issue. And I think we can't preempt that issue. So what we'll do, you will, Wednesday is more feasible. Well, I'm sure we've already said that. And you'll tie that up with the committee secretary. But Ms. Kemmer, there may well be others in your situation. And we don't know, because we're only beginning to get into this area, and I may just say that. So we don't know. We try to help everyone, including, and I'm looking at, is that the National Horse Racing Authority there? Am I right? I can barely see. I see tops of heads. But my secretary tells me that. We even try to help with the horse racing sickness, etc. And people know that. We approached the presidency. So there's no, I'm not favoring one or the other. I'm working what is our mandate. And that is the mandate. So we try to go engage everyone in these matters where it affects the industry and the sport. So having said that, Honourable Smala, I'm going to ask you to share that with me, whatever it is outside of the meeting. I have another important meeting right now coming up, and I'm not even up. That is why I want this whole process to continue. That's the first thing. The second thing in this regard is to ask members, when they do get their minutes from distributed, will they please attempt to read them? One. Two, this document, so not to have any more challenges about paper and copiers not working, is going to be emailed. Because we cannot have this challenge again. I'm sure you all accept that. And I'm going to ask the committee secretary to tell me if there's anything he may wish to add on procedure and everything else. Right. And I don't want to deal with procedure, unfortunately, right now, because 15:15 was when I needed to leave, not for myself. A courtesy. A 30, because you've got a track record.
Chair, after receiving the email document, could I, through your office, email certain questions to our presenter today, so when she does come on Wednesday, that it will maybe assist her to do some research or what, you know, and you know, to come with some of the answers.
In fact, you're a member of the committee, we're all entitled to do that. Let's go ahead. There's no barrier to that engagement. Ms. Kemmer, thank you very much. I'm sorry that we tried to keep our time, as you know. Thank you very, very much. DDG, I hope you will be able to be available on that day yourself as well. If not, at least some senior members of the division, you know, as such. But I know you always do that, so I really appreciate you sitting out throughout. Members, the NCOP committee, that is the select committee, Trade and Industry and International Relations. I have been informed by Mr. Hermans, who tracks all of this, that they have just adopted the report of the intellectual property. So it will go to their house. I think that is, for second readings and third. And you know, we spent a long time on that. Thank you very much for your patience, every member, because you are the hardest working members in this Parliament. Thank you.